are listening to Night Call, the Riff's award-winning talk show on 101 WRIN.
Thank you very much. Welcome, everybody. Hi, Jalene.
Peter, hello.
I don't think that was our legal ID, though.
No.
How do we do it?
It's WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Okay, there we go. How you doing?
Now we're official.
Okay.
Doing well.
All right.
It was very long week. I was telling you before the show, I feel like it's been at least two. I mean, we had the elections and a lot happened this
week. Yeah, I almost... It does seem like a long time ago.
Doesn't it?
Hey, if you want to join us, this is a phone-in talk show, and we're at 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
If you'd like to email us when the lines are filled, or if you're bashful, call talkyes@yahoo.com. I'd like to hear from you about the elections, what your opinion was of them, or anything else, because we are open line. And we were going to talk about the Keith Olbermann, the MSNBC host who was suspended because it turned out he had made contributions to the Democratic Party.
A whopping $2,400.
Yeah, but he's going to come back, you told me, on Tuesday.
Yeah, he'll be back. But so that's a lot of boycotts going on. That was really actually quite big news. I was surprised at how big it was.
Yeah. Well, I wrote him and said, you know what? I'm not going to listen to your channel, your cable network anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they must. Maybe it was mine. Maybe it was mine that put it over the edge.
Oh, I'm sure.
Well, here, you know, I hate to start with something so negative, but here is this guy that writes, and actually I just blocked his email too, because this is not really discourse or dialogue or comment. It's just, I don't know.
It's kind of baiting to me.
Babying.
Baiting.
Yeah, I think it. But here, yeah. It's Dave wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. This was your last one, Dave, because you are now have a blocked email because, you know, who wants to get this? Really curious to see if you're going to be on tonight. I thought for sure you had made the news last Wednesday morning for offing yourself after the drubbing the progressives received on election night at the hands of the Tea Party. This is really important to listen to what's in there, not this stupid stuff about me. That doesn't matter. The key line in here is, after the drubbing the progressives received on election night at the hands of the Tea Party. All right, remember that one. And let's see, the president and his agenda are an epic fail. Epic failure, maybe.
No, this is lingo. This is new lingo. Fail, it's a thing.
Oh, is that right?
Which I just...
How cool.
I know.
Yeah. We.
He's very hip.
We. I don't know who, maybe he's the Tea Party, or maybe he has a mouse.
No, he is the Tea Party. Keep reading.
Okay, we look forward to 2012 when we can finish what has been started. Remember, Peter, this is the start, not the finish of the Tea Party. We will retake our country from you socialist, progressive, Mao-loving anti-Americans.
You know what? He doesn't understand. You're not a Mao lover at all.
Mao?
You yelled at that Maoist out in San Francisco that one time and embarrassed me. I still haven't forgotten about
meow.
It. Meow.
I can't even identify who this is, but someone asked, what's Mao? This is, you know, Mao. It's Mao Zedong. A lot of people don't even know. This is Mao Zedong, who was the communist leader who took over in 1948 who accomplished the so-called Chinese Revolution. So, I mean, that's what I mean. It's so stupid. It barely deserves getting airplay. So why did you read it, Peter? I mean, one thing, just to show the stupidity level of someone like him, the anger.
The anger is really what screams out most of all. And I'm just getting so used to it, but I'm really so over it. So over the anger.
Here's a couple of things.
As I yell.
Here's a couple of things of how we can answer this. First off, by anecdote, couple instances. I went to our two favorite Republicans here. I won't even mention their names or their gender or anything
That's
like that.
Good.
And they both said to me, first thing, with this huge grin on their face, so, Pete, conservatives always call me Pete. Some liberals do, no, but conservatives always call
I'd
me
say
Pete.
It in an endearing way. I'm trying to take it back, you know, like the word queer for gay people. You take it back.
What, Pete?
Yeah. It's not a negative thing.
Can we go on?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they said, so, Pete, what did you think about the elections? With this big, huge, gloating grin on their face.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
So to both of them at separate times, I said, do you really think anything is going to change? And they looked chagrined, and both of them said, Nah, probably not.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, that's pretty surprising.
That's one. The other, this is not an anecdote, but this is in the business section of the Free Press today, Sunday. Just the headlines, enough. Investors drive up stocks on GOP win. GOP is the grand old party, the Republican Party. So investors drive up stocks on GOP win, likely tax break. So that's what it's all about. Mm-hmm. The market is up to like 11,240, the highest in 2 years, because the Tea Party and the Republican win.
I think the Tea Party is taking way too much credit.
Well, yeah. Well, I'll get to that in a second. They figure that they carried the water. They did the heavy lifting for the 2%. And they figure, wow, we got these Republican conservatives in now and in charge of the House of Representatives, so we're not going to have to pay the taxes we were frightened of. So they probably want to thank you. So that's really who should be thanking you. But more than that, the big we here. Well, anyway, let's go to the teabaggers. They actually didn't fare very well. They fielded, let me see if I can, 120. They did 100, and they had 128 candidates. 84 of them lost.
So I don't call that a wash.
Well, it sounds to me like they didn't do very well. 44
yeah, exactly.
44 won, 84 lost. But you know, seven, and I'm stealing this, seven gay Republicans won though.
For real?
Yeah, for real. Of course, we won't find out who they are until they get arrested at a rest stop.
Peter!
I think that
How
was
did
Bill,
I fall for that?
Bill Maher.
I Dare you.
Oh,
God. That's good.
Yeah.
That sounds like a Bill Maher.
All right, let's go back to angry white man Dave here. And although maybe he's not, and he can't write me because we blocked his email, but there's the word.
Oh, the mystery. We'll never know.
Well, there's a word Mohawk in his email address, and you think it might be his haircut, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which I actually like the Mohawk, but he's kind of ruining it for me right now.
But he says, the drubbing the progressives received the election night at the hands of the Tea Party. Well, here we've established, of the teabagger candidates, 44 won, 84 lost, including some of the more prominent ones, like Sharron Engel in Nevada.
Oh, and thankfully.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and the crazy Christine O'Donnell. We gave her enough time during the show that we need to point that out.
She got more mention than any single candidate in the entire election cycle.
Yeah, because she's the craziest.
Yeah, she was the most fun. But here, the Congressional Progressive Caucus, you still listening, Dave? I mean, maybe, never mind. That the Congressional Progressive Caucus, which is the largest caucus in the House Democratic Caucus overall, has 83 members, and they emerge virtually unscathed, losing only three members. So they had 83 members to begin with. They lost three seats.
That's it.
So the progressives, in fact, did not take a drubbing. Who took a drubbing were the conservative Democrats, the so-called Blue Dog Democrats, and their caucus was sliced in half from 54 members to only 26. And of the 34 Democrats who voted against Obama's health care reform, only 12 won re-election.
Mm.
So these guys that were running away from Obama, who were criticizing Nancy Pelosi and criticizing the Democratic Party and criticizing Obama, they're the ones that really got skunked. And good, get rid of them. Good riddance.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I have no problem with them being gone.
But the we here, who's the we here? Really, what happened was that, are you ready for this figure? 39 million less voters turned out for Obama.
Yeah, it was pathetic.
That's what really happened. So the American people, contrary to what John Boehner says, who will be the next House of Representative guy, the Speaker of the House, he's that really what's that? White men have spoken, not the American people. So essentially who got out and voted and created this Republican majority in the House were middle-class, middle-aged white men. Which, hey, that's the way the cookie crumbles. I mean, if other people don't get out, okay.
I was there.
The only group in which the Democrats won were American voters under 30.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, everybody else. But and also, if you can get this, conserved in the 2008 electorate The conservatives were about 32% of the electorate, and they're up to like 41%. So in a way, they needed about 8%, 8 or 9% of independents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there was that really was the shift. So still, what does that say about the Democrats and Obama? I mean, they're a pack of losers by definition and also by description. And the main function of the Democratic Party is always has been to me to hold off the Republicans. I mean, that's why, for instance, the unions spend tens of millions of dollars of members' money to keep out these people that are trying to destroy the American middle class by attacking wage standards and what have you. Well, and for instance, here, also the money thing. I mean, and everybody, well, I forget, what was the total? Wasn't it like $1 billion or $3 billion or something?
It was like $3 billion.
Some obscene amount of money. And everybody got it, Democrats and Republicans. But there is a tremendous amount of difference to a candidate that gets money from the unions who have a broad interest in not only the wage standards and working conditions of their members, but of the working class and the middle class in general, as opposed to the corporations who all funded these Republican candidates. Again, people like this guy, Dave, who are carrying water for the ultra-rich, whose stock goes way up when the Republicans win because they say, hey, these guys are going to give us a good deal. They're not going to tax us. They're not going to put any regulations on us. In fact, they're probably going to take taxes off of us. But what I don't understand is somebody like Sandra Levin, our representative in the 12th mm-hmm. district, who received over $100,000 in dirty energy money, you know, from coal and oil and all of the, I mean, the worst corporations in the United States in terms of the environment. I mean, he won like 2-1. And it was heavily supported by the unions because he always votes right on labor issues. But he was enough to turn me off, and I voted for Julia Williams, who was the Green Party candidate.
And you did what you said you were going to do.
Yeah, and I voted for a lot of other Green candidates as well. Now, we got this guy, Rick Snyder, the nerd, self-described. And the new governor. And I wonder if I can, I don't even know if I can find all this stuff. I got such a mess here. But I think I can remember most of this off the top of my head. Is the headline in the Detroit News or Free Press was that this was going to be a new day and everything like that. And the absolute, here it is from the Detroit Free Press. Rick Snyder, that's our new governor of Michigan, has a mandate for change.
Sound familiar?
Dawson Bell writes, Michigan woke up to a new state order Wednesday after Republicans won all of this stuff. Well, Governor-elect Rick Snyder introduced the leaders of his transition team Wednesday, but gave few new clues about what kind of administration they will be designing or how he will go about pursuing his goal to reinvent Michigan. Everything is up for grabs. This is going to be something new.
Well, good luck.
Leading the Snyder transition will be three Lansing veterans, all of whom work for former Governor John Engler.
Oh, what a surprise.
Yeah.
It happens every time.
So do you really think anything's going to change? Things are just going to get uglier and nothing's going to be done. In fact, maybe that's what the Republicans are hoping for, is that things will just get worse and worse and people will increasingly blame the Democrats for the inability of the government to solve these problems of unemployment and what have you. Things are looking real good at the top, and they've got the teabaggers to thank for that. Like I said, the stock market is way up. They're anticipating regulations being peeled off. The corporations are the investment class. And why in the world ordinary people would do all this? Work for the richest rich people is so far beyond me. I don't understand. One thing I don't understand, there's a book out that's called The Roots of Obama's Rage.
Ooh.
What? Are they kidding?
Where are they getting this?
I don't know. I haven't read the book.
They're making it up.
They're making it
up. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see here. Oh, yeah. I was even writing some of this stuff down. What a concept. We have got to get the big money out of politics, or it's going to be forever corrupted. I mean, without a doubt. The union money goes to the Democrats, but as I said, they get little in return except not having the Republicans in office. And even one-third of UAW members, for instance, vote Republican. And it occurs to me that the millions and millions of dollars the unions literally feel they're forced to spend on the Democratic Party to make sure that this apparatus of the business class, the corporate class, the ultra rich class, doesn't get into power and hammer them even worse, that rang, and whatever that was.
It's Jade's phone.
Jade's phone, yeah, made me lose my train of thought. But you've got to understand what all of this is about. And it's mostly about destroying the unions, which then are the one bulwark against the complete and the successful race to the bottom. Because if you think about it, why was there all this outsourcing that began in the 1950s by taking union jobs and sending them to Alabama and Mississippi and Georgia so they wouldn't have to pay union wages, say in the auto industry, for instance? And then when the South actually kind of caught up to the North a little in terms of wage structure, the corporate bosses said, well, man, we don't even want to pay this. I got an idea. Let's take all of this to Mexico. And then they had to wind up paying Mexican workers a couple, $3 an hour. And they're saying, oh, this is terrible. We don't want to pay workers $2 and $3 an hour. Yeah. Let's go to China.
Yeah.
Let's go to Vietnam.
And so it goes.
Let's go to Bangladesh. And, of course, there's agitation there. China, there's been all sorts of strikes, and some of these auto companies there have had to raise wages and what have you. So it occurred to me, I just had this thought, the one problem with outsourcing for the big companies that want to destroy the wage structure, a middle-class wage structure for ordinary Americans? They have to pay the transportation costs to get the product that's produced in China or Bangladesh or Vietnam back here.
Yeah, which is huge.
Yeah, which is huge. Still, it doesn't amount to the sum that they'd have to pay people decent wages here, right? So what would be the brainstorm that these guys would come up with? I got an idea. Let's drive the wages of American workers down so that they're comparable to those of China.
It's in their sights. I mean, there's so much hope.
Yeah, yeah.
For them.
So the teabaggers, I mean, they're just so, you know, they're just crazy and fulminating about freedom and our liberty, you know, the Constitution, all that. They don't even deserve to be taken serious in a political manner. It is just sort of like a mass psycho movement or something like that. Right?
Yeah, and we search for other words, but we just keep going back to the P word.
The Republican the Republican Party structure itself, made up of the rich white guys, the Mitch McConnells and those characters that lead the party. They are really they're a little nuts, but they're all about
they are a little nuts,
yeah,
Peter.
But on the other hand, they have a real agenda, and that is freeing the corporations so they can function like they did in the 19th century.
Yes, be free.
Yeah, yeah.
Be free corporations.
Yeah, that's freedom. In the meantime, these people that are carrying water for them, that have no idea of the larger agenda, although it's actually, what do they call that, studied ignorance or something like that. I mean, it's all out there. You know,
all the info?
Yeah, that it's really all about is about, you know, the Tea Party is funded by these billionaires.
Yeah.
It's really just the right wing of the Republican Party. I mean, that's all there is left to it. Maybe Rick Snyder, the new governor.
Yeah.
He actually is not in, he's like this moderate.
I've heard that.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, Peter, I want to, this is important because I know that St. Clair, the city of St. Clair,
right.
For those of you listening outside of Michigan, right around here. But it's a pretty conservative town.
Yeah.
And Brendan, who's 16, wrote in and said, that I believe it's a he, took a government class at St. Clair High School and is finally starting to follow us. He said he's listened to us since his freshman year in high school.
Okay.
And he loves everything we say. All the crazy people who call in, we have our share. We do, Brendan. And he says he stays up until 11, stays up late every Sunday night for us. So you're on the right track. We like you to learn a little bit younger. That's good.
Speaking about following us, we haven't even mentioned
a Facebook page.
Our campaign.
Yeah. Peter's on a campaign of telling everyone what to do on Facebook.
Say why you're laughing.
Because you're not even on it.
Yeah, I know.
You said let's work on the Facebook page.
But you are Jalen Jordan.
Working on it.
And Debbie in Northampton, Massachusetts?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Here's what it's our organized labor is deeply worried about what happens after Tuesday. By many measures, labor unions have been the Republicans' fiercest, biggest spending opponents in this year's campaign, laying out more than $200 million in hopes of safeguarding the Democratic majorities in the House and Senate. This was before the election. The Republicans are signaling they would plan to push bills and strategies to undermine labor's political clout and its ability to grow. Now, the private sector is unionized to the incredible amount of 7%.
Wow.
So 93%.
You should be so afraid.
So 93% of private sector workers are not in union. So why in the world would these Republicans care? Well, two reasons. The first one is pretty self-evident, and it's right in there. This $200 million. Get rid of the unions, and wow, there's no political opposition to the Republicans because they have unlimited funds because they represent the corporations. Right, and of course they gotta get some people. They can't just have the 2% voting for them, or they would lose every race. Right, so they they have all this crazy stuff. Well, it is what I said. It's about lowering the standard of living and cutting off the money for the Democrats, but it lowers the standards for everyone. Because it is, in fact, the unions that have led the way always in terms of wage standards, safety standards, retirement, weekends, everything like that.
Yeah, health care,
thank you. Yeah. Let's see, a Republican-led House or Senate is expected to be more eager than a Democratic-controlled one to approve free trade agreements that unions oppose. So, yeah, NAFTA. And you think, wait a minute, didn't Bill Clinton sign that?
Yep.
Yeah, he did.
He did.
But it was a Republican bill. And Bill Clinton.
But he was a good Republican.
He was Republican Bill, yeah. I mean, I hope
right.
Obama.
Oh, that was good.
They would oppose recent bills that gave states $26 billion to help save the jobs of teachers, police officers, and other government employees. A Republican-controlled House or Senate would probably block a labor-backed bill that would give firefighters and police officers in every state the right to unionize. So you see where these guys are coming from. Right? And so, I don't know.
John from Madison Heights sent an email in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. The Tea Party is nothing but a Republican Party faction that made noise, just like the moral majority in the 90s. Tea Partyists won a few seats with not much of an agenda, the modern-day know-nothing party. That's John.
And white Democrats lose more ground in the South. Of the 9 Democratic representatives that remain from the states of the Deep South, that's it. Are you ready for that?
Say that again.
There's 9 Democratic representatives from the states of the Old South. Only one of them is white.
I thought I couldn't live in the South before.
Yeah, yeah. Republicans now hold at least 93 of the 131 House seats from the states of the old Confederacy. Less than 20 years ago,
wow.
They didn't even hold half.
Oh, my gosh.
So what else happened? California rejected marijuana legalization. I was surprised.
Prop 19.
Yeah, I thought they were going to...
Maybe next time around.
I called a friend in California on Thursday.
Uh-huh.
And I said, so how'd you feel about the fact that legalization of marijuana?
Yeah.
He said, wow, man, like I'm going to vote for it.
Yeah.
And I said, it was on Tuesday. He said, wow.
Like, wow. Yeah, I called my friend out in California as well. And I said, how did you feel about the vote? And he said, what? I'm too baked to talk right now. I'm just kidding.
Voters rejected a measure in California to suspend the state's curbs on greenhouse gas emissions while the economy was in the doldrums. So these out-of-state oil companies tried to get this initiative that would allow them to pollute more. Because that's one of the things that they want to be able to pollute more, because then they don't have to spend as much money as they do if they're required to stop poisoning us. This I thought was strange. In Washington state, voters rejected an initiative creating the state's first income tax exclusively on individuals who earn more than $200,000. It was primarily backed by Bill Gates Sr., father of the Microsoft founder. Pardon me, people thought it was the thin wedge. It'll start with the people making over $200,000. And then
go from there.
Yeah. So let's see. Should we? Obama's inviting the Republican leaders to dinner. What a weenie.
I think, I read that and I thought, well, this is just kind of protocol. I mean, he is being a weenie. I admit that. Steve wrote in, hello, Jalene and Peter. Remember when the Republicans were in power and they turned the lights out on the Democrats when in meetings? I kind of remember that.
Yeah.
He said, compromise? No, hell. No. I think he meant, hell no. Thanks, Steve, in Lincoln Park.
This, though, from the New York Times, debunking the myths of the midterm. This goes to Angry Dave, the voters returned to the Republican fold. There was little difference in how voters viewed the two parties. 53% said they had an unfavorable opinion of the Democratic Party. 52% said they had an unfavorable opinion of the Republican Party.
Oh, jeez.
Right. In terms of the health care bill that John Boehner said was a monstrosity, exit polls showed that 47% of voters said Congress should leave the law as it is or expand it. 48% said the Congress should repeal it.
Huh.
Yeah. Voters were also divided on questions of taxing and spending. When people were asked what the highest priority of the next Congress should be, 37% said spending, government spending to create jobs, which was only slightly behind the 39% who said reducing the budget deficit. And only 40% said they wanted Congress to extend the Bush-era tax cuts for everyone, including families who earn more than $250,000 or more. So when these Republicans talk about extending the tax breaks, what does that mean? That means for the rich.
For the wealthy,
because that's who they represent.
You know,
and some of you voted for them!
And Rand Paul, flying colors, got into office.
What does that mean? What? Oh, he got in with flying colors?
I was actually kind of surprised by how much he won, because he really is nuts.
Yeah. Well, he's against the minimum wage. That's part of driving down the whole deal. But one of the things the New York Times was criticizing him because he said he wanted to cut the defense budget, because those Pauls, Dad and Rand, they're totally against having overseas bases and all that.
So yeah,
we're
down with that. Yeah.
The lost youth vote. I mentioned this before. Voters under 30 were the only age group in which majority voted for the Democrats. A disaster for the president. For one thing, he doesn't seem to own the economic downturn. When voters were asked who was to blame for the current economic problems, 35% said Wall Street, 29% said President George W. Bush, and only 23% said Obama.
Oh, my.
So everything that the pundits were saying, trying to put this spin on it, is mostly nonsense. Let's see, despite what politicians, political analysts, and pundits have been saying for a week, if not months, most of the voters themselves claim the election was not a referendum on the president. So there you go. I'm choking to death here.
I think that means maybe a commercial break.
Yeah. Stand in line. We'll get your calls on the air next. Peter Werby, Jalene Jordan. We'll be right back with you.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jalene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
Hey, college football fans, this is Marissa, your Riff Raff girl. Want to win $20,000 for an ultimate sports den to watch your favorite games? If you think you know your X's and O's, click on the Taco Bell logo on your streaming player right now and play the Tic Tac Taco game and enter for your chance to win $20,000 sponsored by Taco Bell. You'll find out instantly if you've won $20,000 towards an ultimate sports den. Plus, 5 lucky people will win $100 Taco Bell Bucks gift certificates. So what are you waiting for? Click on the Taco Bell logo on your streaming player or go to theultimatesportsden.com right now.
Time's running out. You're maxed out on your credit cards. The collection calls are coming every day, and now you're 2 payments behind on your mortgage. Every time you turn on the radio, there's some cheerful couple telling you how they got out of debt overnight. Their stress is gone, and everything's just wonderful. Come on. The truth is, what sounds too good to be true is too good to be true. You need real help, and you need it now. Not bankruptcy. That should be your last choice. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. We're the attorney-driven program, dedicated to helping you get out of debt in months instead of years, saving you thousands, and without risking your family home. We know what we're doing, and we don't make promises we can't keep. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Get out of debt. Call Credit Card Relief at 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. That's Credit Card Relief. 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282.
101, The Riff.
Hey, Larry, mind if I sit down?
Nope.
This coffee tastes like coffee. So what's going on?
Not much.
What's new?
Not much.
Okay, but can you please put the newspaper down while you say not much?
What newspaper?
This newspaper. Oh, dude, what happened to your face? I see one, two,
ow,
three, four, five, six.
Ow.
Dude, what is
ow
this? 11 pieces of toilet paper stuck to your face?
I'm shaving in the dark to save energy. I'm helping the environment.
That's a dangerous way to help the environment.
Well, sometimes you have to sacrifice yourself for the greater good.
Dude, there's an easier and safer way to help the environment without sacrificing yourself. Go green, go public. Take public transportation. It's good for the environment and you won't have to live behind a newspaper.
Wow.
But for now, put the newspaper back up.
A message from the public transportation systems across the country. To learn more, visit publictransportation.org.
We're back with more Night Call. 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back. Al writes into Call Talk, calltalkyes@yahoo.com, and he said that debate, is it the Republican who's going to be the Speaker of the House, is it John Boehner, as he says, or is it John Boehner?
Oh, Peter, here we go.
Well, I just want to defend myself.
Okay.
Stephanie Miller, who hosts our favorite talk show, a nationally syndicated morning show.
She's hilarious.
Yeah, she has a Boehner watch. And
she does.
She does, and she reminds us, and Boehner, Boehner's name is spelled B-O-E. Right?
Like yeah, that. B-O-E-H-N-E-R.
And what's the rule there?
Oh, yeah.
When two vowels go walking, the
yeah
first one does the talking.
That's right.
So it's John Boehner.
Sorry.
Yeah.
It's
Dan
solved.
And Jeremy and Steve and Tom, you hold on, and we're going to get you on the air.
And there are open lines.
There are. Rand Paul says there are no rich.
Oh, boy.
We're just all Americans.
Oh, my
it?
Gosh.
See, this is real fascism, by the way, that we're all just we're just submerged into this nation, right? And as opposed to understanding that whereas most Americans don't realize, I want to take that away. Like the teabaggers, they don't realize class interests they have. They are acting at the behest of the corporate owners without realizing it. And one part of the propaganda is from guys like Senator-elect from Kentucky, Rand Paul. He said, remember, he's the guy that said criticism of BP was un-American. I thought that would have sunk him, right? He said, oh, yeah, here, I like this. He said, we're all interconnected. There are no rich. There are no middle class. There are no poor. And then he said, just remember a few years ago when they tried to tax the yachts, that didn't work.
Oh, my gosh.
Julianne Escobedo, she said it on Alternet, Rand Paul's got a plan to fix the economy. We just need to stop punishing all the sad, pathetic yacht owners.
Right. Yeah, this guy is really delusional.
Yeah. Okay. So, and you might say, what do we think of all these people?
Cheap, lying, no good, rotten, four-flushing, low-life, snake-licking, dirt-eating, inbred, overstuffed, ignorant, brainless, heartless, worm-headed sack of monkeys.
Wow.
Hallelujah.
That pretty much sums it up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All right, here's Jeremy in Bay City. He's driving. Hey, Jeremy, go ahead.
Hey,
you're
how
on
you
here.
Doing tonight?
We're doing good. What's up?
I was listening to your program, and you mentioned that outsourcing, you know, like in the automotive industry and stuff. The only thing I can really put my opinion on as far as that goes is if they weren't paying, you know, $22 an hour for somebody to sit around for 8 hours and push a button, I don't think the automotive industry would be in as much trouble as it's in.
Well, I don't think that had much to do with it. I think that is so disrespectful of the men and women that really, really work hard. I don't know if anybody's just sitting around pushing a button. And why shouldn't somebody
except
for DJs. We're the ones that don't deserve the big salaries like Jalene and I get. Yeah. But come on. Jeremy, you ever work in a plant?
Yes, I have. I worked in the plant. I've also worked on the back of a trash truck, and that's a real job.
Why aren't you a little sympathetic to people that are working? And people, I mean, it's the time of your life, and if economic decisions are being made incorrectly, say that actually an enterprise cannot afford a certain level of salary. Well, that's something that should be worked out in negotiations. But the auto companies always felt that they could, in fact, pay these structures, and if anyone's to blame, it's certainly the company. And why wouldn't ordinary, everyday people want a salary that gives them a middle-class lifestyle? What do you think they should get, $8 an hour?
No, I'm just saying you should be paid accordingly to the amount of work that you do. Because it rolls down the hill is what it
Well, listen, everybody's got to... I mean, how do those cars...
That's such a broad statement,
yeah,
really.
If everybody's doing nothing, how do they get any cars off the line? I mean, that was never a problem.
Seriously, if I should be getting paid like $1 an hour for pressing buttons when I'm DJing.
What's your average?
If we're going to base it on what you just said...
Yeah, Jeremy, you're just part of the rush to to the bottom. I mean that kind of attitude on the part of an ordinary working man, resenting the wages that other people get. You're just guaranteeing that we're all going to be working for $3 an hour. Let me tell you. All right, thanks a lot. Get back to driving. 313-298-WRIF. Here is Dan in Southfield. Dan, I think you're going to talk about something I think is important. Go ahead.
Yeah, I got a question. I was having a discussion with my girlfriend about voting, and she actually told me she did not vote, and her reasoning behind it was that she didn't know anything about the, the different parties and what they represented. And, you know, I basically told her that I felt that was a load of crap.
Wow.
Well, you guys are getting along good.
Well, I mean, you know, we have that kind of a relationship, but, you know, there's so much information out there that, you know, you can't not educate yourself. You know, these are the decisions that are making, you know, that are going to impact us and that are going to impact, you know, our kids. And
sure. She should listen to this show. And it is available on podcast at WRIF.com, by the way, if she can't listen.
The other thing, Dan, the majority of people abstained in this election. I mean, the Republicans probably got, I don't know, 20% of the 21% of the people that voted. And if you would... included non-registered adults, they probably got about 14% or something like that. So decisions are made, no matter who wins, by pretty much a small minority. But this population is probably one of the least, I would say...
Least engaged.
The least engaged and the least educated about the issues of the day, no matter what side of the political spectrum you're on.
Well, they know if Lindsay Lohan's in rehab or not, or, you know,
Part of it is the nature of the political parties themselves. If you go to Canada or England or France or Italy or, you know, Norway or Denmark, places like that, the parties themselves represent something very, very distinctly. If you just travel a few miles from Southfield, where we're in as well, you wind up in Canada, and they have like an NDP, the New Democratic Party, that is a Labour Party. And you could ask almost any single person in Canada, what does the Labour Party stand for there? And they'd be able to tell you. And yet when you can't, when everybody is shifting all around, you have conservative Democrats, Democrats and people that get elected on one platform and then act out another. It really is a prescription for wanting to disengage from the political process. And I'm not necessarily defending the decision. In fact, I'm not defending the decision not to vote at all, but I'm kind of describing a lot decision not to vote at all, but I'm kind of describing a lot why a lot of people don't take part in it.
Well, I guess, you know, I told her that, you know, if she had chose to abstain from voting, then, you know, she should have gone to the polls and cast a blank ballot. Because I really think that even though she did not vote, casting that blank ballot is still, you know, saying something. It's still being active in the process.
I hear you. Well, just make sure you don't disrupt your relationship over this. That's all.
Right.
But I agree. And I could not, honestly, I could not be with someone who doesn't give a hoot about it. I really, and even if they don't at first, at least kind of pretend for me or something, you know? I don't know. I just need someone who's politically
engaged. All right. Thank you, Dan. Let's see if maybe we can get some non-voters on the air. Yeah, I'll tell you. I got to tell you. If somebody would have come to me before the election and said, this whole mess sucks so badly that I'm not even going to bother to vote, I would not have said, you got to vote.
I know you wouldn't have. I would have.
Okay. All right. I can understand that. The Democratic Party particularly, hangs its own self.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. Here is Steve in New Baltimore. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Peter. I would just wanted to make mention of a couple of things. One is about your caller two callers ago.
Yeah.
And he had said that, people just sit around on their butts and...
Oh, the button pressing.
Button.
Yeah.
Push
yeah.
a button.
Are they blame it on union janitors? That's who they...
Oh,
yeah.
We don't have janitors at Chrysler anymore. That's all outsourced.
Yeah, sure. Right.
You know, that's all outsourced. But the people that work on the lines...
Yeah.
Every 6 seconds, the side aperture comes spitting out the end of it. And they're heavy. They're like 65 pounds a piece. They're stacking them for 8, 10. A lot of them are working 12 hours, and some of them are working 16-hour days.
Wow.
And it's tough work. But the other thing I wanted to make mention was that the satellite companies that, I'm in the stamping division.
Okay.
Other corporations that are transnationals and they have satellites in different countries, when the parts get shipped to the United States and they put them on the cars, they overcharge the parts coming to the United States. And when they pay taxes on that, income tax on that, it
yeah.
makes the price of the car look a lot, like they're hardly making any money. Most companies that do this pay on the average of 25% income tax opposed to components that are made in the United States.
Huh.
Now, if they would change the tax base to where they would charge corporate revenue on the products that they sell rather than a corporate income tax, they wouldn't be able to hide that from country to country. It's like the hide-the-pee game.
Well, isn't it all a shell game? When you think about it, I mean, corporations get all the breaks. All right, thank you very much. Thanks for telling us about that. I appreciate it. 313-298-WRIF. Some lines coming open for you. Here is Tom in Wyandotte. Hi, Tom. You're on the air.
Hey, what's up? How you guys doing tonight?
We're doing
great.
Good.
I want to comment on this, what you were talking about a little while ago, about, who's responsible for all this and... he's saying some people think Obama is. Well, Obama just, he stepped up into all this mess. Bush left all this for us, and,
well,
I work two jobs, I drive a cab all night, and then I remodel houses in the daytime, and, I just barely get by.
Wow, man.
Well, you know what, and I think that's...
Agreed on the Bush front.
Yeah, well, and listen, Tom, only 23% of the people blamed the economic downturn on Obama, and those are the, the hardcore teabaggers. But I'm surprised that only 29% blamed Bush, and 35% said Wall Street.
They forgot, but they're going to be reminded because old Bushy has his book coming out.
Yeah.
Did you hear about his... Not to go off too far, but did you hear his most defining drunk moment, what made him quit drinking?
No.
GW. It's when he was at dinner at Papa and Mama Bush's house, and there was an acquaintance who had just passed the 50-year-old mark, and he was drunk, and he said, "So, hey, so-and-so, what's it like having sex after 50? And it's the Bush's friend, and, you know, he was so embarrassed, and he called to apologize the next day, and then when he turned 50 and he was governor, she wrote him a note and said, "So tell me, how is it?"
Oh, boy. All right, Tom, but you're right. And the 23% of, you got to remember, this huge number of people think that Obama's a socialist. They think he's a Muslim. They don't think he's a citizen. I mean, there is this this level of political insanity that people can't even deal on the level of reality. So I suppose we should be fortunate that Obama's only being blamed by 23%. But thanks for reminding us.
It does seem like a lot more, doesn't it?
Yeah,
23%.
Here's Ron in North Lakeport. Hi, Ron. It's Peter and Jeline. Welcome.
Hey, how you doing?
We're good.
Good. I was laid off in 2008 and scrounged for a year and a half. Last October, I got a job making $11 an hour, and you can't make it on it.
No.
They really can pick and choose anybody they want, and I'm glad to be back at my union job making $6 more an hour, and we gave up a lot in this contract to keep our work, and boy, believe me, I'm working my butt off trying to keep the line running.
So you're not just doing, you're not just pushing a button, making the big bucks.
I'm changing dies, working on three different machines at one time, CNC, a press, pulling dies.
Oh, so you do more. Oh, isn't that funny, yeah. Peter? He does a lot more than just sit around and push a button like we do.
Yeah. So yeah. We got a new job, and we got to get a lot of parts out, and you're way behind, and glad to be back. But we give up a lot in the contract. Even the maintenance people, they had to start working 12 hours.
Well,
you know how it is. You know, you got to give up a lot to keep a little, you know.
Well, the thing is,
Sadly enough,
what's not going to happen, if there is a return to what we had previously after Bush and Wall Street wrecked the economy, is are the companies then going to give back? Are they going to stop these two- and three-tier wage structures that unions are being forced to sign on to? And that's what I never could understand. Like that guy says, you know, he worked in plant, he worked, as a waste hauler. And I think what it is, just like I say, this intense resentment for anybody that's making over peon wages. And the guy before you talking about having to work two jobs. Why should anybody have to work two jobs in the wealthiest country in the world? I think that's what we have to look at. All right, Ron, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Here from Phoenix, Arizona, this is Lou. Hey, Lou, you're on the air. What brings you to Detroit Radio?
Hi, welcome from the land of Phoenix, Arizona. I'm Lou of On the Isle with Lou and Kyle.
Oh, yeah, I know your show. Actually, I have an email sitting in my inbox from you guys.
Well, we'll get to that in a moment. I'd like to tell you that, we are a progressive liberal talk show on the internet that spans between Arizona and Michigan.
Really?
And
well,
Kyle
is. Well, yeah, go ahead.
Kyle is a big fan of yours, and as I wrote in the email, I'm a big fan of Jeff Farias. And so here's an online
designer
verbal invitation, right, for you to kind of join us for a little tete-a-tete in the real near future.
Well, I was, believe it or not, and people always say stuff like this, I was going to answer that tomorrow. I really was. But listen, is this where he wanted me to do something over Skype? Wasn't that?
Yeah. Can you do that?
No.
I thought
it was radio. Why do you need Skype?
No problem. We figure if we get you and do a pre-record.
Yeah. What's a pre-record?
Before the show. To record a segment before their show.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Isn't that like record?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. I guess we would call it a pre-play then, in other words.
So
you're talking about teabaggers tonight.
Yeah.
This is a scrimmage line of crazy out here. This is the land of SB 1070. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
No, what's that?
SB 1070 is the law that mirrors federal immigration law, which the Republicans in the state basically want to be able to
Arizona.
Yeah.
without impunity, stop people who they are suspicious of being undocumented in order to deport them.
Huh.
Yep, we've talked a lot about that on the show.
Right. Right.
The immigration, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
And so there's all sorts of laws that are happening out here that are of like of that same kind of ilk. And so it's a matter of social justice that's happening right out here. And, you know, you've heard of our illustrious governor, Jan Brewer.
Yeah.
Right, right. Anyway, that's kind of like part of the theme that we address week after week on the aisle with Lou and Kyle. But the teabaggers are being very clever. They're basically infiltrating Facebook threads. And so I came across one, and this guy was unmasked as a teabagger, but he still kept up his talk. And what he was trying to do, very similar to the Latinos for Voter Reform or whatever that ad was a couple weeks ago, this guy was trying to convince people in the Latino community not to go out and counter-protest the upcoming Nazi march, which will be next Saturday.
That's what they're having a Nazi march in Phoenix?
There's going to be a march of the neo-Nazis, the NSM, the I don't want to give them any kind
of advertising. Yeah, don't give them any, But you know what? On things like that, Lou, I always say the people do best just to
ignore.
To ignore it. Yeah.
I, when I was a news reporter, I had to cover one of those KKK rallies. It was startling.
They count.
Horrible.
Those people are really crazy. They make the teabaggers look
sane. Oh, yeah, and they have their little kids yelling.
So usually what they're, well, I shouldn't say usually, they're always depending. Just like this guy Phelps that...
Fred Phelps.
That pickets
the... Like American Family something.
Yeah, they count on the media to you know, to cover them because they're
crazy.
So over the edge.
They're cray-cray.
And then the people that are protesting them, understandably why they would be protesting them, they're just part of the drama, you know? And so... All right, Lou, let me get on some other calls, but I'll write tomorrow, okay?
Thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
Thanks,
thank
Lou.
You for that wonderful invitation. That was pretty nice.
Really. Peter, you'd look good on Skype. You need to get back, do a little video. It's been a long time.
The guy's got a radio show. Why would I want to do Skype?
I don't know.
Yeah, that doesn't matter.
Oh, maybe they have a webcam.
Yeah, maybe they do.
Huh? Yeah.
Here's Wendy in Port Huron. Hi, thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. You're on the air.
Hi. Well, first of all, I'm kind of not real happy with how the elections turn out.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, when I was, you know, not sure who I was going to vote for, first of all, I was in Port Huron, and we get the Times Herald here, and probably around the 24th of October, they had a booklet that came out regarding the upcoming election, and I kind of looked that over, but then, you know, I thought the Sunday right before the election, though, they had something that was a lot more explicit and that wasn't included in that prior booklet. And I was just so amazed this year at all the options you had, though. Really, I was, because I was amazed there were, like, I don't know, were like 6 or 8 write-ins for governor, all the different parties,
there's
the
a
different
lot of them.
People running.
But, you know, when you have, though, a two-party system, when it, well, let me put it this way. When you have winner-take-all, unlike Canada or other countries, then people get the feeling you're going to, quote, waste your vote. Because if you're a liberal and you vote for, say, a left party, you know, a third party, then you're going to be helping the Republicans. And if you're a right-winger and you vote for some right-wing party, some third party, then you're going to be helping the Democrats. So it's sort of a it's sort of blackmail. You're really forced into voting for often for candidates or for party that ultimately you don't even really want in there. But
you get so turned off and disgusted by the bashing that you see on the TV, you hear it, you know. And I thought I really didn't want to either vote for either of them.
Yeah.
So I didn't.
It's pretty nasty.
I didn't. I voted for like a wide variety actually through my whole ballot. But I think at least it's encouraging. I think this is the first time that I have seen so many options You know what I mean?
So, well, I think people are beginning to have this great dissatisfaction with not only, obviously, with things that they are. Who could be satisfied with this other than the top 2% that are doing just fine with the stock market up, and they're happy as hell that the Republicans got in because they're bound and determined to get the rich people even more money. So, the old rich get richer. But the rest of us are thinking, this doesn't work real well. So great numbers of people that are just getting totally discouraged, and they just stay home. The majority of people stayed home in this election. As I said at the beginning of the show, 39 million people that voted for Obama stayed home. I mean, that's that we had a caller earlier. Yeah, we had a caller earlier who's, I don't know whether his wife or girlfriend or something like
girlfriend.
That. Girlfriend. Didn't even vote, and he was upset about it, yet she's the majority.
Yeah, sad.
So you get this thing, maybe 21% of the people voted for the Republicans, 19 or 20% voted for the Democrats, and over 50% voted for nobody.
That's right.
So nobody won.
Pretty sad statistics there.
Thank you, Wendy. Appreciate your call. Thanks for calling in.
And being engaged in the process.
Yeah. Let me see here. What are we? Okay, we can get one more quick call in. Here's John in Farmington Hills. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter. I just want to let you know I love your show, and I listen to you all the time. And I just want to ask you, do you think that's the chief reason why, we have this idiot Schneider who got in just because people didn't vote?
Well, I think that people are so discouraged in Michigan with what's happening here. It's very possible that people said, wow, this guy Schneider is not a teabagger. He doesn't seem like this right-wing crazo. He's a businessman. He's not an insider. He's run successful enterprises. Maybe we can give him a chance. So, I mean, he won overwhelmingly. And this Verge Monero, I thought would be
do a little better than that.
Yeah.
Yeah, someone actually wrote in and wanted to know if you think Snyder will be good for the city of Detroit and Oakland County.
I doubt it. I mean, I think that that he is going to be another Engler, Governor Engler, John Engler.
Well, he's already padded his...
I mean, he's nothing new. He's already just bringing in the Engler old guard, the Republican old guard. And what are they going to do? I mean, if they would have... Verge Monero, I don't know what he could have done. What in the world could either party do right now? I mean, the big 900... Is that the weight? 900-pound gorilla in the room that none of us ever want to look at, was not even mentioned in the election cycle, was these damn wars and this enormous, huge defense budget. That is what is draining the country. Oh, I shouldn't say that. Let's give some credit here. Rand Paul.
Yeah.
The only one. All right, I got to take a break, but thank you very much, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julene will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Did you know that 65% of U.S. homes are under-insulated? So don't miss Lowe's insulation event going on right now. Purchase qualifying in-stock Johns Manville formaldehyde-free fiberglass insulation and get a Lowe's gift card worth up to $200 via mail-in rebate. Plus, insulation purchases before the end of the year qualify for a tax credit up to $1,500. So head over to Lowe's now or shop at Lowe's.com. Experience. Lowe's. Let's build something together. Offer valid now through December 13th. Some restrictions apply. See store for details. Valid in U.S. only.
Feels like time's running out. Maxed out on your credit cards, collection calls are coming every day, and you're two payments behind on your mortgage. You need help. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. Call Credit Card Relief right now. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Call 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. Call 866-290-8282. That's 866-290-8282.
If you want a new computer but think you can't get credit, think again. Just call Tronics Country right now. No matter what your credit status is, now you can own a brand new desktop or laptop computer. Your approval is guaranteed as long as you have an active checking account and can afford small weekly payments. With Tronics Country, there's no credit check. You will not be turned down. Call right now and order your new computer. You'll also get a free color printer and a free digital camera. Barbara. Just call 800-990-2258. But that's not all. Call right now and you'll also get a free 22-inch high-definition TV with your paid purchase. You heard right. A free TV with your new computer. All you need is an active checking account and your approval is guaranteed. Don't wait. Call Tronics Country right now. Call 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Julene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome to our second hour at 1 a.m. Eastern Time. We will be having a couple of interviews that I did earlier in the week. If I won... I can't. I got too much.
I got too much
of a mess here. Yeah, I can't. But if you go to my website, Peter Werby, W-E-R-B-E, peterwerby.com. A lot of stuff on the elections there, and also you can join our Facebook page. There's a little link to that. Friends Wanted. This is. I'm totally blocking on this friend of mine in Georgia who sent me this. 19 facts about the deindustrialization of America that will blow your mind. I'm not going to read all 19, but the first couple are just incredible. The United States has lost approximately 42,000 factories since 2001.
Oh, my gosh.
How many jobs is that? Oh. Dell Incorporated, one of the America's largest manufacturers of computers, has announced plans to dramatically expand its operations in China. With an investment of over $100 billion over the next decade. What could be done with laws, for instance, would be to tax such an investment to the degree that he, this is Mr. Dell.
In fact, think twice about going to China.
I was, I can't tell this. Never mind. I'll be telling you my password for my Dell account.
Don't do it.
Yeah, never mind. All right. But Dell has announced it'll be closing its last large U.S. manufacturing facility in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, this month. 900 jobs are going to be lost.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Well, and...
Terrible. I was thinking about getting a Dell.
Yeah. Well, I have one.
Yeah.
Got in... And that goes back to what that guy was saying about union jobs costing too much money. Yeah, well, I guess if these people in Winston-Salem would say, hey, we'll work for $3 an hour... And like these teabaggers want to get rid of the minimum wage.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah. And then maybe they'd stay here. Of course, then they would say, and this happened. You know, you go back and read labor history, the 1890s, the 1910s, and that's what these corporation owners would do. Once they had labor in a weakened position, they wouldn't just accept one concession. They wanted more and more and more. Because, you know, eventually, what do they want? The old workers' movement of 100 years ago used to call work wage slavery.
Yeah.
You take away the wage, and what do you got? You got slavery.
Yeah. Marty's listening in Sacramento, California.
Hey, Marty.
Doing laundry and rocking to the Werby program, Werby Jordan. And he said that he wishes that we would get a five-day-a-week radio show, Peter. Oh. I just do that to tease you, Peter, because I know how it exhausts you to even think about it.
Too much.
Anyway,
work.
He's talking in reference to the caller was talking about unions, down about unions. And he said, my question for that caller is, what does an executive do that merits their pay? What do the bankers do that merit not just their pay, but those obscene bonuses that they give themselves? Get that guy or anyone else to explain that.
There you go.
Thanks for listening, Marty.
All right. Marty's in California. Jerry is in Toledo. Hi, Jerry, you're on the air. Go ahead.
How you doing tonight?
Doing good.
Yeah, I just want to say you guys have been pretty bashing Bush pretty bad, and you seem to think that Obama isn't to blame, but he's the one that is trying to socialize medicine and add to the debt. You talk about the defense budget being so big. What do you think is going to happen when that health care kicks in?
I don't think you're reading like the Congressional Budget.
We haven't bashed Bush for a really long time.
Congressional Budget Office, Jerry, says that the health plan will, in fact, cut into the deficit. What makes you think it's going to, where are your figures that it's going to increase it?
When you add people to the coffers, where's the money going to come from?
Wait. It's not coming. It's it's all this private insurance. It's not going to come from the government.
Well, eventually it's going to have to, because my company just cut their health insurance because of the one-payer system that they're going to. I lost my health care.
It's not going. We wish it would go to single payer. It's not going to one single payer.
Single payer. Single payer means the government would pay everything like they do.
And that did not pass muster at all.
No one even suggested that. In some ways, this is just a big capitalist giveaway. They're going to be giving millions of more customers to private insurance companies.
But eventually, they want a single payer system. If they could have gotten it passed, they would have had a single payer system.
Well, I don't. That was never, ever on the agenda. What they had was a public option that that Obama stupidly gave up on, which would have been a competitor to the private system. So when they start raising rates, the public option would have rates at a fair at a fair level, and that would mean that the that these insurance companies couldn't gouge us like they're doing. I don't see what the downside of this is. He hung up. Because you know what? You didn't know what you're talking about, man.
That was a perfect example right there, Peter, of people who heard something and believed it without doing any type of research. If you really think that we have a single-payer thing going on, or that's going to happen anytime in the near future, you're crazy. The Democrats and the Republicans, neither of them want that. Just a very small percentage of the Democrats do. In Congress. Anyway, let's say open lines. We're
yeah, we need them. 313-298-WRIF. Like to hear your opinions. Now, great numbers of people, I don't know what the percentages are, think that under Obama, taxes went up, when actually there was a tax cut for everyone under Obama. And it was Bush that extended it into the very, very wealthy. Let's see. Good numbers of people think that the economy has shrunk, although it's continuing to expand. Not enough, of course, and that TARP, the bailout of these companies was never paid back, which it was.
Yeah.
So people are dealing with this absolute wealth of total misinformation.
Yeah.
It was nice, though, the Mama Grizzlies. I mean, don't you just want to spit every time?
What's happening with the Grizzles?
They didn't do well. Sharon Angle, who spent, $130 million trying to defeat...
own money.
Yeah, yeah. Carly Fiorina in California got her butt kicked for the Senate race.
Mm-hmm.
And Christine O'Donnell, she didn't do well at either.
She didn't do well at all.
She was supposed to lead a stampede of pink elephants to shake up Washington.
Oh, God.
Yeah. All right.
Peter.
Here's Matthew in Toledo. Are you guys in the same house? Hey, Matthew.
Yes, hi.
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 You're on the air. Are you guys in the same house?
No, I was, as a matter of fact, I just got a phone call, and I was listening to it, and I turned around, and I'm like, okay, I'll just call in. And okay, first of all, Obama did want a single-payer health care system, and this is the back door to it.
What makes you think that he does? I mean, I wish that he does, but he doesn't.
No.
What makes you think differently?
He does want a single... Haven't you ever heard any of his interviews that he's ever given?
Yeah.
You can go on YouTube, and you can find all his single-payer speeches that he gives. He wants a single-payer system.
Well, listen, one of the things we can't argue about...
Well, I can tell you don't.
One of the things we can argue, we cannot argue about are facts. And if there's somewhere in there, I mean, maybe he did, I don't know. I can't remember ever any policy statement where Barack Obama said what the United States needs is a universal single-payer health care system like they have in every other industrialized country.
Something we
could easily afford if we weren't wasting our money on this enormous war budget that we have, including things like sending Obama off to India with all these battleships and all that. But you'll listen, you know what I'm saying, Matthew? We just can't say, I'm saying saying he never said it. You said he did say it. We got to get some information on that. That's definitive. Don't you agree?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, you can look, you can go on YouTube, and you literally can find every speech that he's ever ever given. But okay, so be it. You know, some people want single payer system. They really think that it's going to reduce the deficit, which it's not. Okay. It's the whole fact of the thing is, you know, I don't know if you really, you know, want this health care bill or not. You think it's such a wonderful idea, but the health care bill is unconstitutional. There's nowhere that states in the Constitution where the federal government can tell its citizens that they have to buy a product.
Well, you know, that could be the stumbling block of the whole thing. I agree with you, Matthew, that it is pretty strange demanding people have to purchase that. On the other hand, it I don't know. I mean, it could pass muster because, you know, there's all this stuff like these teabaggers. You know, they don't want a Department of Education. They don't want they don't want an EPA, any of that stuff. But there's a phrase in the Constitution that says the general welfare. That's what the Constitution, one of the things it provides for, is defense and the general welfare. Well, you could put anything under general welfare, right?
I mean that we have to support all these people, all this socialized products that are out there, like Social Security, Medicaid, that's basically bankrupting this country. There's a way to fix it without destroying just the middle class people.
Wait a minute. You don't support socialized government programs?
No, I don't.
How about
the roads?
How about the police? How about teachers? How about?
Let's stick to one thing at a time. First of all, the police aren't socialized. Okay.
Wait a minute.
That is a local government thing.
Well, yeah. So what?
It's about the government?
Yeah, it's the government. We don't hire them. You know, like we don't get together a neighborhood and see who can afford.
They're not outsourced.
How about the teachers?
Are you trying to tell me that that teachers are worth $100,000 a year when our education system sucks?
Teachers are worth $100,000 a year. Well, absolutely.
Hey, didn't it occur to you that everything in this country kind of sucks? Don't you know that in our schools, and let me tell you, you're certainly have hit on something with the education. Right now, we have one of the worst education records in the world. I mean, certainly of any of the industrialized countries. I mean, I just grabbed this. The high school graduation rate in the U.S. is below 70%. In urban centers like Los Angeles and Detroit, it falls below 50%. U.S. ranks 35th internationally in math between
And he's blaming it on, this
and
guy
Croatia.
Is blaming it on the teachers.
Azerbaiian and Croatia.
Oh, really?
29th in science between Latvia and Lithuania. So this is all the teachers' fault, right? And it's the teachers' union, because we want to destroy the teachers' union. And you know why? Because they're Democrats, right? Yeah.
Why did you even bring the teachers into this and that $100,000? I don't get that.
Clear. All right. Thank you very much. What?
Oh.
All right. I'm glad.
Very angry. Very angry.
Yeah. I'm glad. Who won? There was the Ohio War. I think the Ohio won, and then they got to keep Toledo.
Oh, Peter.
No, this was way back when. Yeah. All right.
Now, don't blame it on Toledo.
Here's Chris and Flint. Chris, hi, you're on the air.
How y'all doing tonight?
We're good.
Good. Do we have sanity in Flint? We don't have much sanity in Toledo.
Well, I used to live in Toledo. There's not much sanity there.
Okay.
I moved all over the country, and y'all are real good. I love listening to you. You kind of contradict all those things those idiots on the other stations talk about.
You know what I love? I love that a guy with a southern accent thinks we're good. That makes me very happy tonight.
Well, y'all been putting on some of these weird-ass calls. I'm sorry, the weird callers that, man, blaming Obama and blaming the union.
This is a sample size of what's going on nationwide.
I don't know.
I think so.
Well, you know, all those teabaggers and all them, like Sarah Palin and all them, all they're doing is lining their pockets and at the cost of us workers.
Well, they, why don't these people understand that, that these people wind up to be millionaires? They say, well, what about those movie stars that that back the Democrats?
There's not much of a bigger movie star than Sarah Palin right now.
Right. And, but as much as the Democratic Party it gets payoffs from the corporations and often does legislation that favors them, I mean, it's nowhere near like what the Republicans do. And it's because of the big money that dominates politics. I mean, what's got to happen? I said that before. We got to get all money out of politics. So for one thing, our unions, and I belong to a union, and here's one of the things. Let me just put this out there, Chris, because the my union, which is the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists, obviously giving our the job of so many newscasters in the media, they're not going to be backing candidates. But our union makes contributions to the state and the national AFL-CIO, which in turn then puts money into Democratic Party elections. And the, so does the UAW, and so does these other unions. So instead of spending money on organizing new people into unions, they're forced because of the need to combat the hundreds of millions of dollars that these big corporate interests, including foreign companies, put into our elections, spending our dues, in many cases, getting people that I don't even want to vote for. Mm-hmm. Like they gave money to Sander Levin, and I didn't want him to get any money of that. But thank you, sir. Thank you for your kind words and for your opinions. Appreciate it. 313-298-WRIF is our phone number. Here is Steve in Westland. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. Hi, Jolene.
Hi.
Hi.
Having a wonderful night, aren't you?
Yeah, we always are.
I was calling that last guy took the wind out of my sails. He said it well. You guys done a great job.
Well, thank you.
And these wackos that are calling in, man, I feel like they just hijacked your show. Like I watched them hijack this health care debate.
Yeah.
I wish we were getting single payer. The only country, the only industrialized democracy in the world that allows these bankers and these insurance salesmen and these shareholders and bondholders and these CEOs and executives of insurance companies to make money off the backs of the people. $400 billion a year is taken out of our pockets, the pockets of the working class and the poor. And these thugs call up radio shows and want to talk about socialism and the government stealing and Social Security bankrupting this nation. What about the Bush tax cut? What
sure.
About, you know what? How long has this been going on, Peter? You've probably watched this your whole life.
About 300 years.
Yeah. That's been a long life.
And you know what? Working people have had to fight every single inch of the way. And finally, by the 1950s, our parents and grandparents and what have you got just entered middle class life, mainly because of the unions, I would say pretty much so. And just as these Republicans, these right wingers, these mouthpieces for the big corporations have tried to destroy all that, tried to stop that from coming into being, are now on a campaign to stop it. And they see this weakness of ordinary working people, and they're dreaming about the destruction of the wages and the benefits that ordinary people have had, because it is all about wealth distribution. Because the less money that we have, the more money they have. And they've got more money than God as it is, but they're never satisfied because this system is based on pathological greed. And the system itself, like the majority of people in this country, are not greedy. What most of us want is just a comfortable life where we don't have to worry about whether we can send kids to college or whether we can pay our bills or whether
we can
pay the mortgage, pay our health care, and what have you. And a little aspirations. Maybe we can do a little better. But they, as we talk, these guys on the right are scheming how to take all of that away from it. And it is so pathetic that ordinary working people back that effort by supporting a party that is 100% committed to driving down the wages and the benefits and the standard of living of the middle class and the working class, and of course, absolutely screwing the poor. Wow. You want me to tell you what I really think?
Yeah, yeah. And we will never let these crazies hijack the show. This is what this is. It's a public forum, and we welcome all sides of. If we were just sitting here and having people who agree with us, you know, bow in front of our and kiss our feet,
ditto,
that would be that would be really boring. So it is a little more exciting to hear some of these nutbags call in. Bring it on.
I'll tell you, Steve. I think what happens as well. I think the overwhelming majority of people that listen support what Jalene and I are saying. And I can see that by the emails and what have you. But when somebody is on the air saying what, agreeing with you, there's not the impetus to call. But when someone is saying something that you don't agree with, well, then you're going to call them. Also, it's usually shows attract about 90% listeners that are in sympathy with the host. But since this is just a rock and roll station,
We
get people from all over the spectrum.
We do.
Yeah.
We like it that way. So
like
if you agree, call. If you don't, call.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate it. 313-298-WRIF. I got to get this. Maurice in Detroit, you're on the air.
Hey, Peter, Jalene, how y'all doing?
Good.
Maurice.
How y'all doing? No, I like to make a comment about what Kid Rock said about Steven Tyler being on American Idol.
Yeah? What did he say?
Kid Rock, when you reach the status of a Steve Perry, living legend, inducted to the Hard Rock Cafe, you can make those kind of opinions. Sometimes it's best to keep your mouth to yourself. So well, when
Steve Tyler.
Steve Tyler, not Perry.
When those minutes are coming to Detroit, you know, with Steven Perry or Tyler, saying fuck man, you can come pick me up in my limousine. We can go to the concert. You mean it's good, but you have not reached that level yet.
But wait, what did
she's
Steve,
mad at
wait,
Kid Rock?
What did Kid Rock say?
You are a boy compared to Steve Tyler. What?
I think he was negative. He had a negative reaction to Steven Tyler.
What I was really surprised
being a judge
about,
on American Idol
was that Kid Rock was at the rally to restore sanity.
Mm-hmm.
He did a duet with
Sheryl Crow.
Sheryl Crow. But I didn't like the song.
Yeah,
Maurice, thank you.
He was. I felt like
he was saying, "I can't stop the war.
I can't do anything." And it's kind of. It was to me discouraging people from being politically active. We're loyal to the kid here at WRIF. Very extremely loyal. Play his music. Love him. We all know him. All of that. You know, many of us have met him. Whatever. But it doesn't mean we have to agree with his politics.
Yeah. Okay, let's take some more calls. 313-298-WRIF. Let me see, where are we going here? Here is Don in Ferndale. Hi, Don, you're on the air.
I'm pretty good, man. How you doing?
Good.
Yeah, I'm a first-time caller. I was
welcome.
Looking through the stations. And I was looking for some rock music, followed you guys, and wanted to give you a call, give you a couple opinions I have.
Please.
Okay, well, first off, I heard some guy talking about reducing the deficit.
Right.
So I was thinking, in my view, you know, maybe cut off foreign aid for a couple years.
How about forever?
Yeah, there you go.
Wait a minute, Don. You don't want billions of dollars to go to Indonesia and Israel and Jordan and
Saudi Arabia.
Taiwan. You think we should actually keep our money here in our country rather than sending it over there so all those countries can build up their army so they can make war on each other?
Yeah.
Wow.
Exactly.
Radical.
We can help ourselves. And we, you know, let them other, you know, let's try it for at least a couple of years, see how it happens, see how it works. And if it works well enough, you know, keep it off.
I think
it
would work fine. You know what, Don? I think if you put this foreign military aid, I'm not talking about sometimes, you know, it's good to help people even when you're having some problems. If, you know, like Haiti or something like, there was a few million there. We're talking about tens of billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars over the year that goes out of our pocket, yours and mine, and you know, people that are working, and goes to these other governments. If you put this up to a vote, it would probably lose. The idea that we'd be giving away this money probably by about 90%, don't you think?
I would agree.
Yeah. Okay. What else you wanted to talk about? Something else?
Another thing. You probably won't agree with me on this, but. Legalizing marijuana.
Man, you are radical.
Why would you think we wouldn't agree with this?
Because he's never heard the show before.
Oh.
Yeah, I never listened to the show.
No, no, man. We're all about legalize it, man.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Well, I say this because, first off, you you take out a lot of money that's being spent to combat this drug.
Sure.
And then you'd make money taxing it.
Well, you know what? This is another thing, Don. The war on drugs is another racket, because it's what I always say is this transfer of wealth. In other words, if you're working and you pay taxes, what do we get for it? We were talking also about health care, real health care. And so that we can either spend all our money giving it to Indonesia and Saudi Arabia and Israel and Jordan, places like that. We can have bases all over the world preparing for World War IX or something like that and building atomic weapons and all these armaments that would be for essentially fighting the Soviet Union. And also a war on drugs. So what that does, it takes our money and it pays for that. That's where the money goes for it, rather than our roads and schools and free college tuition and
police
and fire and roads and all of that. So we got our choices. It's about the allocation of resources, or let's say the wealth. Taxes are wealth transfer to begin with. But one of the things that can happen is we pay taxes and we get a health care system. We pay taxes and we get schools with 15 kids in a classes. We pay taxes and we get, you know, fill in the blanks. Don, thank you so much for calling. And if you found us, we're on every Sunday night at 11 o'clock. If you're on Facebook, you can join as a friend. Just hit Night Call in.
Night Call with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan.
You got it. All right, Don, thank you very much. Appreciate it. 313-298-WRIF. That is our phone number. And here's Nick. Nick's in Rochester Hills. Nick, hi, you're on the air.
Hey, I watched a video with a guy from Think Progress asking a speaker at a Tea Party Patriot gathering if he thinks that Exxon and Bank of America paying 0% in corporate income taxes and Google paying something like 2% were appropriate tax rates. And the response he got was very telling, but probably completely over the heads of his teabagging followers. What he said was that low corporate taxes actually raise tax revenue, because if corporations are able to hire more workers, it generates more income taxes,
sure,
sales taxes, and real estate taxes.
Well, that's essentially the whole line. And that's why they say if we don't extend the tax, the Republicans say if we don't extend the tax breaks to the upper 2%, that will be hurting ourselves, because what if they get more money, then they'll do more investment. But that hasn't happened. For one thing, all of these companies, the financial and manufacturing sector, are sitting on hundreds of billions of dollars of cash reserves that they're not doing anything with. And when they got all this money under Bush, all they did, they didn't create new jobs. They invested it in the stock market. And that was part of the great crap game that finally crashed in on us. So it doesn't hold water. All right, Nick, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Here's Walter in Detroit. Hi, Walter. You're on the air.
Good morning to you. This is the first time I ever called you guys. I listen to you a lot here.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, I'm a sergeant in the police department, and I can tell you some major deception that these guys are telling you. And I'm going to ask you a question, okay?
What?
I'll drive my scout car down the street, and you were injured. You got hit by, a car.
Mm-hmm.
You broke your leg. Where would I take you?
Receiving. Detroit, okay. Receiving, yeah.
You have no insurance. What happens?
Gets picked up by what? Medicaid or whatever.
Hospitals will care for you.
Sure.
People who don't have insurance at this present moment are going to the hospitals, and they're getting treated at the hospital. Hospitals, by law, cannot reject an injured person.
Right.
They must treat them. And these Tea Party folks are saying, oh, yeah, we got to cut health care. But the thing is, you're paying for it anyway right now. The greatest government health care program is the U.S. military. They have a beautiful health care program for guys who leave the Army, the military. Congress has a great health care program, and they want to eliminate government out of business. You got to look at the abortion program they're fighting for. Get rid of that stuff. The other deception they have is they say, well, if we lower the wages, government lower the wages of people and lower the taxes of the industry, they'll make more money and the people pay be able to buy more houses. But if you lower the wages, you can't buy the house.
That's right.
So there's so much deception going on here, and I would challenge any Tea Party. I wish they would call you, because I'm going to listen to this. I got to go to bed.
Yeah,
you have a city to protect.
I want somebody to call and say this much. He says, well, the police department is local. He doesn't understand that the federal government pays a large portion of the salaries of police officers throughout the country. And many police departments cannot exist without the funding from the federal government.
Sure,
and
particularly this last stimulus that came. And the Republicans opposed that.
And you want some startling thing? If they say get rid of the government, take an example of what happened with Russia. They got rid of their government. And see what happened. And sooner or later, when they go to China, at some point, China's going to demand the money from the United States to pay back. We can't pay them back. Then China's got to do what to us?
Well,
at some point in the next 10 years, 15 years, China is going to go to war with the United States of America because the United States cannot pay the debt.
Well, you know, they're smart enough not to call it in because you're right. I mean, we'd have no capacity to repay it. And yet, they just keep borrowing more. At some point, that the debt limit has to be raised. And a lot of these Republicans are saying that they are not going to vote for this, which could mean the shutdown of the U.S. government. And that would be when we would wind up defaulting, the United States, wealthiest country in the world, so-called, defaulting on our loans. Well, thank you, Walter. Thank you for joining us. Thanks for listening, and thank you for calling, and we will be right back.
You're listening to Nightfall with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jolene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
That's the sound of people throwing out their old dehumidifiers. They've replaced them with the energy-saving Wave Ventilation Unit. Wave Ventilation expels moisture, gases, and toxins trapped in your basement or crawl space and replaces it with drier, fresher air. The computerized Wave Ventilation requires no maintenance. There are no buckets to empty, no filters to change. And compared to a dehumidifier, it will save you hundreds of dollars a year in energy costs. One customer wrote,
"I was stunned by the difference. I had a dehumidifier for almost 20 years without ever getting rid of that musty smell. And now that smell is finally gone."
Wave can transform your home into a drier, healthier environment. Satisfaction guaranteed. Find out more about Wave Ventilation right now.
For free information, go to goodairnow.com. That's goodairnow.com. Or call 1-866-324-9481. That's 1-866-324-9481.
Detroit's Rock Station, 101 WRIF.
The Ref.
My mom is my hero. She goes into burning buildings. She finds people inside who need to be saved. She helps them get out, even when she can't breathe or see or is a little scared. My mom is a firefighter, but the best thing she can do is come home.
The U.S. Fire Administration reminds you to protect yourself and firefighters. Have smoke alarms on every level and near sleeping areas. Test them monthly. Change batteries as instructed. Install sprinklers. Do your part to get out before firefighters have to come in. The fact is, most fire deaths occur in homes with no working smoke alarms. The good news is, that's a fact we can change. Smoke alarms save lives. Find out more at usfa.dhs.gov.
I guess we got caught up in the crazy housing boom.
We had been in the house so long, we didn't want to lose it.
What these people share is that they all got in trouble with their mortgages, and they all called a certified housing counselor for help.
Our housing counselor looked at our paperwork and she knew something was wrong.
She understood what needed to be done, and she helped me work it out with the bank. This is a free service. Call the National Foundation for Credit Counseling now. Call 1-866-687-6322 or visit mortgagehelpnow.org.
Detroit's Rock Station 101, The Real Riff.
Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe-clogging line scale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Line scale deposits block the heating element, and that could be costing you an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove line scale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare, the patented device used worldwide. See for yourself at BestSoft.com. tappedwater.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents limescale buildup in your entire plumbing system. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances with HydraCare. Try it risk-free. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com. Or call now, 888-883-8187. That's 888-883-8187.
He ran for state office and was beaten. Started a business and failed. Ran for Congress and lost. But thankfully, Abraham Lincoln didn't give up. Perseverance. Pass it on. A message from the Foundation for a Better Life.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. You're Peter and Julie.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back to our final segment, 313-298-WRIF. Joni's listening in Massachusetts, and she wrote in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. She said Massachusetts had a high turnout rate on Tuesday. Most of the country. Gee, I think in Detroit it was like 18% of people.
It was really bad.
They elected Dems to all Massachusetts state offices and to Congress and rejected a ballot question to slash sales tax in half by a large margin. Some people say that Massachusetts had buyer's remorse after they elected Republican Scott Brown to Ted Kennedy's seat back in January and made a strong course correction back to the Dems this time. With luck, the U.S. will follow the Massachusetts example, she said.
I like the idea. Thanks for the email.
Right. 3-1, I just gave you that one. Well, we have callers here as well. Here's Damien in St. Clair Shores. Hi, Damien. You're on the air.
Hi. How you doing?
Good.
Love the show.
Thank you.
I was just wondering, what do you think it's looking like for Hollywood coming to Detroit here now that with this latest election coming up?
Well, I don't know, man.
I was watching one of the local news shows this morning where they do the debating kind of thing like they do on Meet the Press or whatever.
Yeah.
And they seem to think that Rick Snyder understands the importance of the film industry being here.
And the film industry, which gets a...
is it 40%?
They get 40% of their expenses back. And
yeah.
Some people have argued that it's been a net loss for the state. Other people argue that, in fact, that it has... there's all these residual benefits
that aren't even counted.
That's
the side I'm on right
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
But
most of us...
Even the Republican, whoever it was who was on the show, I don't know who these people were, said that Rick Snyder would be crazy to get rid of that.
What do you think, Damien?
I'm hoping it works out because I'm recently going to school for film school, you know, at Baker College here in Clinton Township, and I'm praying that it works out for us. And,
yeah, we need this. And plus it's just cool.
Yeah, I just saved a whole bunch of money on my car insurance.
Well, that's good.
Wait a minute.
Thank you, Damien.
Was he going to give us a filet of fish?
I don't know
where that was going.
But actually, friends of ours that live over on Drayton and Ferndale,
yeah,
they're shooting a film there right between Livernoy and Pinecrest.
Aren't they? Really?
And so this is a residential middle-class mm-hmm. neighborhood, and there are semi-trucks up and down the street,
wow.
cables
yeah.
everywhere, and they took two houses. And they went to the people and they said, we're going to give you a lot of money per day if
yeah.
you go stay at a hotel.
They can do it at mine.
But, you know, most of the neighbors are not real sold on that, I'll tell you.
Well, it is a major disruption, you know. They have
yeah.
a lot of people with
yeah.
little kids, barking dogs.
Here's Brad Nipsilanti. Hey, Brad, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing tonight, Pete?
Good.
I got a question for you, you know, about the one proposal they called the Kwame Kilpatrick thing.
Proposal, yeah. Proposal.
Convicted felons are no longer allowed to hold public office for like 20 years.
Yeah.
Do you think eventually, in your guys' opinion, that it will reach a point where simple people who are convicted of simple misdemeanors will eventually get that same form of punishment, not being able to hold a public office?
God, I hope not.
Well, Jolene would be disqualified.
Oh, you know, I had fun in my 20s.
But you know, Brad, this is weird to say. I can't even remember how I voted. It wasn't even a week ago.
I actually voted against that.
Yeah. I wonder who in the world thought that this was an issue. That
I mean, the thing is, like, I'm not going to hold it. Like, a friend of mine from high school, she got in trouble with cocaine many years ago. She's a convicted felon. But I think she'd be a pretty good politician.
Well, it's kind of, you know, Marion Barry, who was the mayor of Washington, D.C.
Oh, twice.
Yeah, twice. I mean, he kept getting convicted and they would come back. I mean, there's some fear of that.
With the crack and the hookers.
It
and
doesn't seem like it's this problem that rose to the level of having to have, was it a I don't know. I remember. Was it a constitutional amendment, Brad?
I think it was.
I mean, which is ridiculous.
Remember,
yeah.
But
the other thing was that the ballot proposal to have a constitutional convention lost badly. Now, I voted against that because I wasn't sure why it was really needed. It was odd. Both the state.
I voted against that too.
Both the state AFL and the Chamber of Commerce were all against it.
Mm-hmm.
But not sure what it was really all about or what motivated that.
It seemed
that
like a bagger move to me.
I was a little worried it was.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Brad, thank you very much. Some open lines in our final segment, 313-298-WRIF. And let's see here. Well, actually, let me get this one first because this is Terrence in Ocala, Florida. Terrence, hi, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hi.
I want to challenge your school teacher thing. And first I want to say the Tea Party stands for Taxed Enough Already. I wish you guys would provide a definition for your teabagger, whatever you mean by that.
Well, that's what
what they called themselves.
That's
to begin
what they called
with.
Themselves they originally until they figured it out. Tax enough. We have one of the lowest tax rates of any of the industrialized country, and we actually just had a tax break, a small one for middle class people, under Obama. So, what's the problem?
Teabagger is like the N word. Is this a degrading word?
They called themselves though.
Google it. Google. Say just Google origins teabagger and see what you get.
Okay.
They're the ones that call themselves teabaggers.
I want to challenge that teachers are not worth $20,000 a year because if you meet any graduating high schooler and ask them to diagram a paragraph, and they can't do it. They're not educated. They're taught how to have sex, how to deal with drugs, and how to listen to rock and roll.
What century is this, Peter? I feel like I got in the hot tub time machine, is a movie.
Somebody that should know just wrote in saying teabagger is not like the N-word. So
yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you can homeschool your child for $500 a year. You can send them to Catholic.
Well, yeah. Why don't we all have homeschooling?
Yeah, let's stay home because people don't need to work or anything.
Hey, Terrence, the problem is that we're trying to educate kids with 45 people in a classroom. That the schools do not get enough equipment. That some teachers that I know have to take their own money and buy toilet paper. We have a system in crisis. It's not the teachers. I mean, if some teachers are a part of it, it's part of a whole system in crisis. And I got to tell you, I mean, listen up again to this. The reason that there's an attack on teachers now is because they're trying to destroy the teachers union because they want, you know, it's a right wing thing. They want to have more and more charter schools where you can have all sorts of unconstitutional things go on like prayer and what have you. I'd rather have and prayer does rock and roll in schools. I don't know, but prayer does not belong in school.
Well, I never mentioned prayer at all. The school board members of Detroit get $100,000 a year in limousines, and the children don't have toilet paper. Now, what's the problem here? It's not that the books aren't there, that you can't teach a child how to read. Is that
well, they don't have books either. Wait, how do you know so much about Detroit? Are you from Detroit?
Yeah.
Okay. You're lucky because it's already like 28 degrees here. Does corruption settle in and at Los Altos? For one thing, those aren't the teachers. That's the school board. And the teachers I know, in fact, I live next door in the suburbs to a teacher in Detroit. And I'm sure, Terrence, that you, no matter where you, if you have kids or had kids or whatever, that you would love to have this man and his wife, who's actually a teacher as well, teaching them as well. So, you know, don't put it off on the teachers. We have an entire system from the ground up in this country on every aspect of social, cultural, political, and economic levels that is in crisis. And trying to find scapegoats, like it's a teacher's union, something like that, does not solve the problems. Or in homeschooling. Yeah, let's homeschool 10, 30, 40, 50, 60 million kids. All right. What is this? Snowbird? Isn't that what it is? Have a good time down there. All right.
A couple of open lines and about 10 minutes left of the show, probably.
313-298-WRIF. Here's Brian in Westland. Brian, hi. You're on the air.
Hey, how are you doing, Peter?
We're good.
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Welcome.
My question to you is, I'm actually a small business owner, young guy, 25 years old, and I don't have any political affiliation. I'm wondering why people that make under $150,000, other than religious beliefs, vote Republican.
Here it is. It's in music. You ready for it? I think you can hear this.
Yes. That's the best question I've heard all night.
Do you know what that's from? Oop, damn it. I
kind of hung up on him.
I hung up on him.
And it was the best question of the night.
Yeah. Call back.
We'll make the one call per show rule. We'll make an exception for you.
I'm sorry, man.
What a buzzkill.
Yeah. Well, I screwed this show.
We did so well for an hour and 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Hey, Peter, did you hear about Spain and the Pope? Did you hear about this?
There was a
queer kiss-in.
Flash mob.
It was a flash mob. Yeah.
Tell people what a flash mob is.
Well, that's when people get together and just kind of out of the blue start dancing and do a routine.
Through Twitter or...
Social media.
Some social media of some sort. Yeah.
And, you know, the old Pope, Spain, the gays and lesbians in Spain were welcoming the Pope, who was coming to their country, with a massive homosexual kiss-in to be staged in front of Barcelona's cathedral. Are they trying to give him the big old heart attack?
Well, it already happened.
It already happened,
actually.
And he lived through it.
Yeah, he
amazing.
Did. Yeah. There was, it was a small group. It was about, here's Brian. It's back.
Okay.
Brian, my apologies. I didn't do that intentionally. I hit the wrong button.
Yeah, I see how it is.
Yeah. Was it something you said? We liked what you said.
I'm a button pusher.
I have a friend. He works for a large big box store. And, you know, he's a gun-loving Republican. And I just can't understand. It's like he shoots himself in the foot. Just beliefs and the way he talks about the Republican Party. I'm like, listen, you don't benefit from any tax cut. You know, you make $13 an hour. You could use health care, you know?
Yep. Absolutely. That's a very good question.
Without calling names, I think it is deeply psychological. I think in part it could be that people are so despairing of either party really speaking to their needs in a very strong and definitive way that they just kind of retreat into symbols of what parties represent. And I think to many people is that the Democratic Party, well, let me put it another way, is that the Republican Party represents these manly virtues of strength and guns, and, you know, it's also, you know, almost all white people.
And wealth.
Although, you know, the gays all vote for the Democrats, and women vote for the Democrats, minorities vote for the Democrats, and so the Republican Party is literally the party of the white man. And
I would agree.
And, there's a lot of exceptions. In fact, Republicans just had two black conservatives that were elected. Did you hear me earlier where I said there was also seven gay Republicans that were elected?
Wow. That's absurd.
Well, no, but, well.
For a Republican.
Bill Maher said that we're not going to know who these seven gay Republicans are until they get arrested at a rest stop.
One more
or an airport. Yeah.
One more point I'd like to make is I'm a small business owner, like I said before, and I tell a lot of my Republican friends that I would gladly pay more in taxes if it saves one of my family members, you know, that didn't have health insurance, that now has health insurance, and couldn't get the care that they, you know, would normally receive.
You know, that puts you very high in the compassion scale, as we usually talk about these guys that are very low on it. But, you know, you shouldn't have to make those choices. And that's why there's so many – why aren't there good choices? I mean, why can't you run your business without having to make choice? In order to be successful, do I have to pay low wages, not offer health care, you know, stuff like that? Or, you know, that should be as a given. Can you imagine being a business owner, 5-6 miles from where you are in Ontario, and those business owners don't have to pay any health insurance at all, either for themselves or for their employers, because the government takes care of it for them. Wow.
Absolutely.
What a concept. But
I can agree more.
All right.
Well, I hope you can get into your friend's brain a little bit with that.
All right, Brian, thank you so much for calling by now. And here is Paul in Southfield. Hi, Paul. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. Hey, I want to say that I think your show is fantastic, and the two of you and people like that, I can't think of one thing I disagree with you on. I think you're about as right on as can be. However, there's one place I think I'm going to take you to task as well.
Sure.
Take Michael Moore to task.
He thought of one.
I mean, because Michael Moore has said that he's very optimistic that things are going to turn out fine. That's why I mentioned him. I don't think it doesn't look like anything's going to turn out fine. The far, 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 far right control just about 100% of the hegemonic dialogue in this country. And people like that last caller before are a nickel a dozen. There's 50 billion of them in this country. And frankly, we're slipping farther and farther into 41st place among the 41 industrialized nations in every single category there is.
Sure.
And basically the barbarians have taken over, and I think it's too late for us. I think it's time to preserve the 12 good countries in the world so they don't become like this.
Well, that could be, but things have an odd way of turning around. And what could happen, I mean, the Republicans have no platform, program, policy suggestions at all that are going to turn anything around in this country. So just like in 94, the Democrats lost so bad, and then 1996, Bill Clinton got reelected. But it certainly, if that happens again, I don't know that anything's going to be solved for the long-range problems that we're talking about, what I was talking about, the corruption from top to bottom. But I don't know. I mean, we can just, as we say, keep on keeping on and see what happens.
Yeah.
All right, thank you very much.
A lot of damage done, though.
Yeah,
I agree.
A lot of damage done. Here, let's see, David's listening in Walla Walla, Washington. Always reminds me, too, that a good way to hook up with us is go to our Facebook page, which is just facebook.com/nightcall. And we're going to go on a big campaign. Right now, we're just in, what do we got, about 600? That's too low.
Okay.
That's way too low.
All right.
Yeah.
We sat at about 100 for, don't know, 9 months.
We haven't done anything with it. Now you and Debbie are.
We're on it.
Kicking it. Yeah. Hiya, Pete and Peter, laughing out loud because we were talking about what I'm called. And Jolene, love the show tonight. Y'all, election political breakdown is refreshing. That said, gotta say you've got a hell of a lot of retarded fanatics there in the greater Metro Detroit area. I'm from Washington State, and I was wrong in thinking Walla Walla had a lock on right-wingers, but I was wrong. Your region is almost totally weird. What a bunch of idiots there. I love your program, longtime listener. Well, I say, I think
it takes all kinds world go, to make a radio talk show.
Daywan Ron writes in, hey guys, great show tonight as always. I've heard you say a few times now about giving back your fillet of fish. I missed something, I think. What's up with that?
Well, all of this is that McDonald's commercial that Peter and I didn't even know. Someone called in 6 months ago and said something about give me back my fillet of fish. Now it's become a small thing.
Yeah.
Where it's the same couple of guys who, at least they're not calling you a D-bag. Or maybe, okay. I think he did that, did both in one phone call.
By the way, Tina, thank you. This is, your correction is correct. Let Jolene know that the passage of this proposal that would ban felons from public office would not affect her friend running for election. It only bans someone convicted while in office or a government job and with the conviction being related to that job.
Well,
You're
call,
right.
Call yeah. me an uninformed voter, then.
Yeah. Let's get some of these final calls in here.
I can take it.
All right. Here is Lewis in Roseville. Lewis, hi. You're on the air.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good. Doing good. What's up?
I wanted to talk about the teabagger thing, but you guys mentioned the whole fillet of fish.
Yeah.
Yeah, I started that. You yeah. douchebag.
For some reason, we enjoy it.
Here's Todd in Canada, your last caller. Thank you for making the program international. Todd, tell me quick. We got to go. Hey, Todd.
Yeah.
Hey, Todd.
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah, tell me quick. We got to go.
Hey, I just want to say, Canadian Healthcare, you guys need to get our system because I got hurt at work in Kansas City.
Yeah.
And it cost me $1,275 for 28 stitches. And if I would have got hurt in Canada, it wouldn't have cost me a dime.
Yeah, we want it. We want it bad.
I think that does it, Todd.
That says it all.
Yeah, that wraps it. Thank you, Todd. Thank you, Todd. Yeah, right. How about that? So, but all you...
why don't y'all switch it to a McRib? Isn't that the thing right now?
Yeah. All you teabaggers, don't worry. We're never going to have health care for everyone.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you, Stephanie. And thank you, Jolene. All right, we'll be back next week. Stay tuned for the interviews.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
Feels like time's running out. Maxed out on your credit cards, collection calls are coming every day, and you're two payments behind on your mortgage. You need help. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. Call Credit Card Relief right now. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Call 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. Call 866-290-8282. That's 866-290-8282. If you want a new computer but think you can't get credit, think again. Just call Tronics Country right now. No matter what your credit status is, now you can own a brand new desktop or laptop computer. Your approval is guaranteed as long as you have an active checking account and can afford small weekly payments. With Tronics Country, there's no credit check. You will not be turned down. Call right now and order your new computer. You'll also get a free color printer and a free digital camera. Just call 800-990-2258. But that's not all. Call right now and you'll also get a free 22-inch high-definition TV with your paid purchase. You heard right. A free TV with your new computer. All you need is an active checking account and your approval is guaranteed. Don't wait. Call Tronics Country right now. Call 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
Our son would go from "Good morning, Mom" to words you'd never expect to come out of your child's mouth. Our pain came from not knowing what to do. He was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia. 5 or 6 years later, he was diagnosed with obsessive compulsive disorder. I think the hardest part of living with someone who has a mental illness is thinking that you're alone, that no one else could understand. NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, is made up of people who live it every day. We lean on each other and we learn from each other. NAMI doesn't let anyone give up hope. My name is Mary Tadikin, and I can tell you what NAMI has meant for my family. It has meant that we are a family.
1 in 5 adults lives with depression, schizophrenia, anxiety, or other mental illnesses. NAMI provides education and support to these families and individuals. To find a local chapter, go to NAMI.org or call 800-950-NAMI.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me, and welcome to the broadcast. We're recording this on Wednesday, the day after the election that saw, well, as the USA Today says, voters send angry message. GOP, that's the grand old party, the Republicans energized by Tea Party make big gains, Dems lose Senate seats. And John Boehner, the presumptive Speaker of the House, says this is going to be a new era. Everything is going to change. This is going to be an era coming ahead of limited government and limited expenditures by the government. Let's get a look at it if we can. Sometimes it needs maybe a little distance. We're going to go right into the fray right now with Karen Dolan. Karen Dolan is a fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies. She's the director of the Cities for Progress and also the Cities for Peace Project that are based there. She has an MA with the highest distinction in philosophy and social policy from the American University in Washington, D.C. She's been with the IPS, the Institute for Policy Studies, which I would highly recommend their website, which is IPS-DC.org, but we'll give that again during the broadcast. And let's welcome Karen Dolan. She's at her office in Washington, D.C. Hi, Karen. Welcome to the broadcast.
Hi, Peter. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, should we just try to dissect what's going on? What do you think about that headline? Voters send angry message. Is that what it was all about?
You know, I would have a different headline. And my headline, I think that the hidden story in here, and I've blogged about it on Huffington Post, but my headline would be, buck up, people, progressives won.
Huh.
Now,
that means the liberals, the left, not the right wing, not the Tea Party, which is 180 degree opposite of what we're being told.
Yeah, I mean, we had some, there were, of course, some wins from the Tea Party. Rand Paul, probably the most infamous, but there were quite a few of the extreme members of the Tea Party who went down, Christine O'Donnell and Sharon Angle and Carly Fiorina. But I think one of the really energizing stories, especially for people who care about economic justice, social justice, who care about getting that unemployment rate down in Michigan and in the rest of the country, is that the members of Congress who actually care about these issues did not lose. They won. So when you look at the most progressive elements of the Congress, of the House of Representatives, the Congressional Progressive Caucus, which is the largest caucus in the Democratic caucus, only three of those 83 members lost. When you compare that to the Blue Dog, the conservative Democrats, the ones who voted often with Republicans and participated in obstruction and voted against health care reform, their ranks were cut in half, by more than half. And of those Democrats who voted against health care reform, there were 34 who voted against Obama's health care reform. Only 12 of them were reelected.
Really?
So I think that this is a very positive note for people who care about economic justice that is one of the hidden stories of the election.
Well, what about the idea that this is a revolution, that that the Obama, whatever it was, has been repudiated, and now we're going to enter a new era?
Well, I think there's no question that there was a historic gain. 60 seats in the House is a big gain, and there's that's indication of a lot of dissatisfaction and pain, frankly, among people in the country. And, of course, your listeners in Michigan know that all too well. With an unemployment rate of 13%, there's a lot of pain in Michigan and, of course, in Detroit. And I've spent some time in Detroit, and the pain is palpable. But I think that the Republicans have done a very good job of exploiting that pain and turning it into fear and misplacing the blame. And so you see a sweep of Republicans into Congress because people want jobs. They're afraid. They do want change. They don't necessarily feel all the benefits of the change that Obama and the Democrats did give us. There may have been a stopping of the bleeding, a stopping of the hemorrhaging of But for those of us who lost our jobs and haven't found another job and realize that the jobs aren't there, that's of little consolation. So what do? We turn to in a different direction, think that that might help. But that's a fear-based reaction. That's not a rational reaction. That's not a reaction that really provides a strong foundation for any kind of ideological revolution that the Republicans are trying to claim.
Karen Dolan is my guest on the Peter Werby Show. She's a fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies. We're talking about yesterday's election because we're recording this on Wednesday. Yeah, we don't have any demographics in terms of who actually voted. And I wonder whether, in fact, it was people that were hopeless about their own job prospects or fearful about losing their job that actually that voted in the way they did. I mean, there certainly is a much less of a turnout than there was 2 years ago, and people keep speaking about that the Democratic base, youth, minorities, even women to some extent, stayed home. And that, in many ways, that's what made the crucial difference.
That's right. I think that's the most important piece of it, Peter, is not who came out to vote, but who stayed home. And I think you're exactly right. It's the young people, it's people of color. In some cases, women went behind what they saw as strong women candidates in the Republican Party.
Well, you know, there's been some... I'm sorry, go ahead, finish your thought.
No, but I think that's right. I think that the key is who stayed home and why, and what can we do about that, because those demographics are Democrats. Those people are not Republicans. They're not people pushing a Republican revolution. They're people who weren't as inspired to come out and vote as they were 2 years ago.
Well, I asked somewhat earlier, maybe you could expand on this. Is this going to be a new day? Does the Republicans now have the capacity to actually change this huge growing government that occurred under Obama and their language, and now it's going to be reined in?
No, I don't see how they can do that. There isn't a governing majority that can make that kind of a difference in the next 2 years. You have a Republican majority in the House, but you've got a Republican Party that's a mess. You've got some Tea Partiers who are anti-establishment of the Republican Party. You have some people that are going to be very hard to govern within the House of Representatives. So people like Boehner are going to have their hands full. And the same thing on the Senate side. What we'll see is a lot of stagnation. We're not going to see this big change. We're not going to see this big revolution. We're going to see nothing happening.
Yeah, the gridlock is probably the word we hear the most. Now, this also is not unusual, even following great presidents, great majorities, say like 1936, when Franklin Delano Roosevelt won more, won by a bigger majority and more states and electoral votes than any president in the history of the Republic. Then 2 years later, the Dems got pasted, right? What did they lose, something like 72 or 78 seats or something, more so than this?
Yes, that's right. That was the last time there was such a big shift. And, I mean, perhaps most instructive for us is to look back after after Bush won his second term in 2004. A critical year to look at is 2005. That's when we saw progressives really become creative, really take control of organizing and getting messages out and energizing themselves and their base and all the kinds of right moves leading up to Barack Obama's election in 2008. We haven't seen that since Barack Obama's election, and it may just be that this midterm election is just what progressives need to regroup, to re-energize. We're now less encumbered by these conservative blue dog Democrats who've lost in droves. Obama is less encumbered by this. Obama is freer to do some executive orders. We as progressives are freer to push people on this. We should not take at all the Republican line that this is some sort of mandate for a shift to the right. On the contrary, we should be touting that the progressives won, that we do have heroes on the Hill, and they're progressives. And 2 years from now, they will be the heroes. The Republicans will be seen as the obstructionists they are, and they won't. We won't be able to. The country won't be able to blame it on Democrats. So I think that we should take heart from this. We should look at how we have come back before when we've experienced a defeat, and how that has, in some cases, presented us with opportunities that we didn't have when we had perhaps a majority in name, but we, because that very majority, at least in the last 2 years, has served in effect to stifle some of our more creative and progressive tendencies.
Well, Karen Dolan, you're using the pronoun we, and I assume that there's probably at least some of my listeners, maybe half, who knows, that don't include themselves in that progressive we, are probably delighted that there was a Republican victory. They think that this will stay the hand, they think, of a nation going in the wrong direction. I don't know if this is called upon, but any word to them? What would you actually, let me preface it while you can think about that. Let me preface it with that. Here at the station, I was talking to, I specifically wanted to see whether the Republicans here would go up to me and go, nah, you know, and they didn't. They didn't even mention it. And I brought it up, and they were somewhat delighted. And I said to them, do you think anything's really going to change? Every one of them said, no, they didn't think so. So I don't know where that leaves us or leaves them. Any word to them? If you were in my place, what you would say?
Well, I think that's right. I think that the average voter, regardless of which party he or she may have voted for, understands that this election, contrary to the soaring rhetoric from the Republican establishment, is not going to result in a big change in Capitol Hill, but will result in gridlock. And if I were living in Michigan or in Detroit, and I live here in Prince George's County in Maryland, which has some similar economic challenges, with a very high unemployment rate that you have in Michigan and Detroit, and a very high poverty rate, and one that has risen in the last 2 years, yet you can also see some of the American car companies that benefited from some of the stimulus. And there were ways in which people were kept out of poverty by some of the stimulus programs. So we can see the effect, especially in areas of that are economically vulnerable, that the effect of safety net programs such as Social Security and unemployment insurance and food stamps, things that are that we and our neighbors vitally need, we as people of the American public, that those have worked, that those have kept some of us out of poverty, have kept some of our neighbors out of poverty. And those are the kinds of programs that if we see them dismantled, if we do see, if Republicans make good on their vows to dismantle social safety net programs, and we see ourselves and our neighbors fall into poverty, I think that this we won't be perceived as a partisan thing. It will be perceived as we who are citizens of this country, who are human beings, who are entitled to a decent standard of living, who are working hard if we have jobs, or working hard trying to find jobs that aren't there, that we shouldn't be penalized. And I fear that some folks who bought into the fear of the Republican Party haven't realized that this is the end goal of the privatization that the Republicans have promised, and the slashing of government spending that has protected so many of us.
Well, Karen Dolan is my guest. She is a fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies. You can go to their website, ips-dc.org. There'll be a link on my website as well, peterwerbe.com. Now, There is some thought that that this election has guaranteed the re-election of Barack Obama. That is to say, in 1936 and in 1994, the sitting Democratic Party, the Democrats, lost a tremendous number of seats, yet Franklin Delano Roosevelt and Bill Clinton, 2 years after their big historic losses, won re-election, because there is this cycle, and maybe you can speak to both what I said, but also to this concept that there's a merry-go-round. That is, so people said, well, I mean, just these Democrats didn't do what I thought they were going to do for us, so we're going to vote for the Republicans. And as you were indicating a little earlier, by 2012, they're going to be thinking, man, these Republicans, they're just obstructionists. We better vote for the Democrats again. And so, what people want is the forward progress that isn't being seen ultimately within either party.
I think that's right. And I do think that this bodes well for Obama for 2012. And I do think that with the Republicans in control of the House, that it will be harder for them to say we're not responsible for anything. So the past 2 years, they haven't been. They haven't had the majority in either house, and they haven't had the executive branch. And their sole job, as they saw it and what they did, was to obstruct. I think that it's going to be very difficult for them to do much more than spin their wheels where they are now. And whatever little chippings away they may be able to do to some of the really hard-fought and greatly needed social programs are only going to serve to hurt the people further. And I think that 2 years from now, we're going to have a public that understands much more clearly what the agenda of the Republicans are and are not going to be happy with that and are not going to vote for that. And hopefully, the base who brought Barack Obama and Democrats into power will be energized enough to go out and vote in the presidential election in 2012 for the change that they wanted.
Well, I hope Barack Obama doesn't act like Bill Clinton and start signing Republican bills like NAFTA and the Telecommunications Act and repealing financial regulatory legislation. But if he remains steadfast, there's no way that the Republicans can get any legislation through at all. I mean, they can't get it through the Senate, and if for some reason or other they could do like they did with Clinton, one would hope that Obama would be smart enough not to follow the Clinton road.
Well, that's right. I hope so. I mean, I think one could imagine that the administration has learned its lesson, especially from the healthcare debate, of bending over backwards with hundreds of Republican amendments and getting no votes. I mean, they went above and beyond to try to woo Republicans, to try to water down progressive movements that were designed to keep Americans out of poverty, to create more jobs, to give us health coverage. And in the process of watering down these protections for us and losing a lot of their base, what did they get in return? What returns were there on bipartisanship? There weren't any.
No.
So it wouldn't make sense for the next 2 years to look like the last 2 years, but that's up to the American public. That's
mm-hmm.
up to us.
Well, Karen Dolan, you talked about the Republicans wanting to fray the social safety net. They can do it around the edges, perhaps, but the real big expenditures are the budget for war, which, if you count everything in, is probably close to $1 trillion, another third larger than it's actually designated as the defense budget, and also Social Security and Medicare. And despite the fact that there are some far right wingers and libertarians in the Republican Party that would like to repeal Social Security, that would be suicidal. So there's reducing the size of government. I don't even if they had a president and control of both houses, I don't think they would or could do that.
That's right. I mean, that's more a part of this gridlock. There are, you know, as you say, around the edges, which around the edges matters a lot.
Sure.
To people who are living on the edge. So that's something we have to be very vigilant about and really push the administration on and the progressive elements in Congress, whether they be of whichever party they're of. There, you know, there's an element within the Tea Party and within some of the more libertarian Republicans newly elected that may, in fact, be amenable to cutting the size of the military budget. I mean, that's another sort of silver lining.
Sure. Certainly Rand Paul, who, like his father, wants withdrawal. Well, yeah, we'll see what he does when he gets to the Senate, but wants a withdrawal of all foreign U.S. bases, which would is hundreds of billions of dollars of expenditures.
Yeah,
we'll see how far he gets with that. Let me run this by you. You're a fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies, what we call like a policy wonk, someone who, and I'm in that tradition. We think about these things. We read as much as we can. We look at polls. We read history and all of that. Well, I mean, we're in a pretty small minority of people in the country that do that. And I'm not saying this from an elitist point of view at all. It's just as a matter of fact. And increasingly, it seems within the United States that people are basing their vote on a visceral sense of the world and what they want, from their guts, their emotions. And so you see that, for instance, in the African-American communities. It was very, very important to them for Barack Obama to get elected. I mean, it was like an affirmation of, yes, you are finally fully recognized as human beings within the society that had brought you here with slave, kept you in segregation. And I'm sure you saw, you know, in Washington, the elation way beyond anything to having to do with policy or anything like that. Same thing. We get the idea, and this to the latter part of, you know, white men, regardless of their class, even like perhaps a third of union members who vote for a party that one of their goals is to destroy the unions that these guys belong to. So we're always, you and me and the Institute for Policy Studies and what have you, are all about trying to create a mass intellect that will figure out what's best for us in real terms, our best for us, our families, our neighborhoods, our communities, our states, the world. But we might be just dealing with just some twisted mass psychology.
Well, I think that, I mean, it's a mistake not to take people's emotions seriously. And unfortunately, the Republican establishment has Fox News, so they have a huge megaphone through which to manipulate emotions and to play upon fear, and that can't be underestimated. The voice of reason and sanity, as Jon Stewart would say, and really an expression of the average person's self-interest doesn't have that platform, or at least if it's there, it hasn't been used effectively. I think in this day and age of blogging and YouTube and the kind of technology that sort of democratizes so much, there is the potential to overcome the fear factor created by Fox News. But that's incumbent upon all of us. And we do need to take these emotions are very serious. The fear is palpable when there's no job and there's no money and there's no way to make ends meet. Folks are desperate, and that's real. And it surprises me that the right wing was able to capitalize on it as much as it did. But again, I think that that has to be attributed to manipulation through media venues like Fox News. And I think that the American public is smarter than that, but we're in a very difficult situation right now where we're grasping at whomever is throwing us a safety net, and we don't see it, even though the ones that are throwing the safety net are the progressives, and the ones that are fraying the safety net are the Republicans. That's not the way it comes across on the airwaves, certainly. And we as progressives and people who care about a safety net and who care about people's lives really need to pay attention to that.
Well, we just have 60 seconds, so I want to direct people to Karen Dolan. You mentioned a Huffington Post. Is this going to be at the IPS site as well, or should we send people to the Huffington Post.
I think so. I think so. I mean, I blog on Huffington Post, as many people do, and so that's under my name at Karen Dolan. We also have a blog in IPS where I did a Glee-based election analysis last night that's there. But also I would recommend that people look at our Battered by the Storm report that's on the IPS-DC.org website, and that talks about the fraying of the safety net and gives some concrete, practical policy solutions for how that safety net can be repaired and maintained, and how we can create an economy that works for all Americans.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being on the broadcast. My guest has been Karen Dolan. She's a fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies. She just gave you the website address. I highly recommend it. I'll have a link on my site as well, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com. Thanks again for being on the show.
Thanks so much, Peter, and thank you to your listeners.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
Time's running out. You're maxed out on your credit cards. The collection calls are coming every day, and now you're two payments behind on your mortgage. Every time you turn on the radio, there's some cheerful couple telling you how they got out of debt overnight. Their stress is gone, and everything's just wonderful. Come on. The truth is, what sounds too good to be true is too good to be true. You need real help, and you need it now. Not bankruptcy. That should be your last choice. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. We're the attorney-driven program, dedicated to helping you get out of debt in months instead of years, saving you thousands, and without risking your family home. We know what we're doing, and we don't make promises we can't keep. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Get out of debt. Call Credit Card Relief at 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. That's Credit Card Relief. 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
101 WRIF.
The Riff.
Hey, this is Lars from Metallica.
Hello, this is Flea from Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Hello, this is Brian Johnson of AC/DC. You're listening to Detroit's home of rock and roll, WRIF.
Everything rocks.
Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe clogging line scale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Line scale deposits block the heating element, and that could be costing you an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove line scale without chemicals, magnets, or assaults. It's easy with HydraCare, the patented device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents line scale buildup in your entire plumbing system. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances with HydraCare. Try it risk-free. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com. Or call now, 888-883-8187. That's 888-883-8187.
You ran for state office and was beaten. Started a business and failed. Ran for Congress and lost. But thankfully, Abraham Lincoln didn't give up. Perseverance. Pass it on. A message from the Foundation for a Better Life.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much. Peter Werby here with you. If you've listened to this broadcast over the years, you know what emphasis I put on history. History is important because it tells us about ourselves, what happened in the past, how it affects today, and what we can often expect from the future. Part of it, though, is who controls history. What kind of histories are we reading? What are the antecedents of what we think are important today as concepts that rule our lives? A very important one, and it probably just or may just nag at the back of your mind, you may remember from high school or college history, is the Magna Carta. It was a document signed between nobles and King John in 1215. Well, here we are, 800 years later, and we're going to talk about the Magna Carta, indeed. And we'll talk about how it has extreme relevance for today. Joining me in the studio here is Peter Linebaugh. He is professor of history at the University of Toledo. He's the author of The London Hanged, Crime and Civil Society in the 18th Century, and co-author of Many-Headed Hydra, The Hidden History of the Revolutionary Atlantic. Peter Linebaugh, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Thanks a lot, Peter.
Yeah, this is, I'm almost at a loss how to start this, because this is something that really, in many ways, takes up all of Anglo-American history, doesn't it? The Magna Carta, I should say, by the way, it's important because that's what we're going to be talking about. The book that Peter Linebaugh has just written is the Magna Carta Manifesto, and its subtitle is Liberties and Commons for All. Very important concepts. We'll get to those. So why is the Magna Carta something that that took your interest and has relevance for today?
A very good question, because I wasn't studying it, but along came that big crisis in the fall of 2001 with the destruction of the Twin Towers, followed by wholesale arrests and the war on terror. And habeas corpus went out the window. Then it wasn't long before torture was resumed. And I was wondering, where did these start? How is it so easy just when we need to have such rights, such safeguards against autocratic states? Had we forgotten where they came from?
Why don't you review for us what the Magna Carta was and how it came about in 1215?
Yeah. Pete, can I add one other thing, though?
Sure.
That man, Subcomandante Marcos in Chiapas, he had referred in 1994 to Magna Carta, and that really got in my ears, you know, that Indian people from Central America knew about Magna Carta, and we didn't know about it.
And this is the Zapatista Comandante.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
So, briefly, the story is Magna Carta was a big deal. It was like a social contract, as you said, between King John and the barons, but also between Christians and Jews, between the individual and the state, between merchants and lords, between the church and the monarchy. It was really, at the time, 1215, of crusades. It was a time of the formation of the central monarchs. monarchies, the state, in other words. It was a time of the formation of the merchant class, and it was a time of global crisis for the Mediterranean commodity trade. And in this crisis, common people or commoners were cannon fodder, but it's even before the time of gunpowder. They were the churls, the villeins, the serfs, the people who suffered in war, and especially their widows suffered. But anyway, I'm getting off the track. Basically, in 1215, Bad King John was forced to agree. He didn't sign it. At that time, intellectual work or writing was considered beneath the care of the ruling class. They were just specialists in either religion or mainly in arms. So King John had to agree to it viva voce. That means out loud. No sooner had he agreed to it and gone off than the civil war resumed. Magna Carta was basically an armistice. And it was lost. He dropped dead, and then it was found again after his death on the 11th of September, 1217. And that's when it got its name as the Big Charter, to distinguish it from the Little Charter, or the Charter of the Forest. These two charters have been the basis of so-called Anglo-Saxon liberties ever since.
I was taken, of course, by the resurrection to my consciousness of the Magna Carta. And there are so many documents in Western society, of American society, English society, that we talk about being the basis of our liberties. Yet, no matter what is guaranteed in the Magna Carta or in the American Constitution, we see it in the breach so frequently that it's violated so often. When you mention that within the Magna Carta that the right of habeas corpus to be brought before a court, things like slavery, torture, all of that certainly has taken place since that signing in 1215. But is that just, tell us what it does, and has it actually had strength, or is it just words on on parchment?
Right, it's on parchment or animal skin. The words were in Latin, and then there were different versions. Yes. And then the history of this document becomes part of statute law, 100 years later. To this day, the Magna Carta is the first statute in the statute book. If you go to law school in England, that's the first thing you read. In any law school here in the United States, you can go take it off the shelves very easily. There's 63 parts to it, or 63 chapters, and there's 17 chapters to the Charter of the Forest. The 39th is the most well-known. It's the one that says no free man shall be deprived of his liberty or his possessions without due process of law and trial by his peers. And it's that chapter which sometimes you'll see engraved in courthouses. That's the chapter that you might have studied in Latin class. That's the chapter that in subsequent centuries kind of grows to include habeas corpus, that you can't be taken, you can't be arrested, you can't be imprisoned without a reason being given.
I was going to say, the whole idea of rights is, some people have said, is problematic in the sense that rights are granted, but there has to be some, I don't know if you'd say ideological foundation to why we say, hey, government can't do this to us. We should be able to live this way or that way. So does the Magna Carta, even though that it's been violated throughout English and American history, pardon me, any number of times, is that its importance, that it actually has, that's the core of what we can point to and say, that's what we deserve as citizens?
Yeah, definitely. This is very important to understand that rights are not given, that rights are taken. We take our rights. We prove them. And I think it's, if you stop and think about it, the powers of government come from us, come from common people. that King John's powers and the powers of all ruling class, their wealth, comes from the wealth that common people produce but don't enjoy. So King John would like to take all, to himself all the forests and turn them into private hunting preserves so he could have 500 deer to give as presents at Christmas time as an expression of his magnificence or his wonderful majesty. But in doing that, the poor widow who used to be able to go to the forest to gather kindling or to gather fuel for her fire, for warmth in the evening, is deprived of her fuel. So chapter 5 of Magna Carta very simply says that the widow shall not be deprived of her reasonable estovers in the common.
Estovers are...
And estovers is really a key word in this discussion because it refers to the rights to hydrocarbon energy resources.
Okay.
Which at that time was wood. In our time, of course, it's petroleum. In between, it was coal. But this is the ecological foundation of energy and thus of human life. And who is going to get it, or who is going to, whose labor will bring it forth, and who will enjoy it, are abiding questions. And governments like to monopolize this to themselves.
Peter Linebaugh is my guest on the Peter Werby Show. The book is The Magna Carta Manifesto. And tell us a little about, well, in fact, let me also repeat the subtitle, because that's what I'm going to ask. Liberties and Commons for All. If you live in the eastern part of the United States, there's always a commons, like the Boston Commons, the Amherst Commons, places like that. Almost every Massachusetts city, at least, has a commons. And people are called commoners in the sense that we think of most of us to distinguish us from the ruling elite. But if you would, Peter Linebaugh, speak a little about the concept of the commons and that phrase, commoners.
Yeah, I think you said it very well. The commoners are people who are separate, and they're workers. I would say the commoners are the working class. The commoners are peasants. Commoners are people whose fingernails are dirty because they work in the earth. Commoners are those who know that all the sources of life come from the earth. Commoners know how to make vegetables. Commoners know how to hunt. They know these are the people who have brought grain for our beer, have brought grain for our bread. These are the workers in the earth. And they know what is useful and what isn't. And their labors, the product of their labors throughout history, has very often been taken from them. And much of the history of commoning is the struggle of commoners to maintain their communities because farming, like all other forms of labor, most other forms of labor, is cooperative. It's done with others. And I think it's really important for us to see that this kind of labor was not patriarchal, that common labor, and especially in relationship to the forest, put women at a very important central part in her knowledge of herbs. The forest was their drugstore. It was their pharmacopoeia, their region of pharmaceuticals. And so healthcare depended on the women's knowledge of the forests. To remove the woman from the commons was a violent process in British and in European history, as generally called responsible for the witch craze of burning witches, which is really kind of a crime in human history on the same scale or similar scale as the transcontinental African slave trade. In fact, they happened at the same time.
Talk to us, if you would, about the date September 11th. You mentioned, of course, the most recent September 11th in our country. You also said that there was an important date in the progression of the Magna Carta for September 11th, but there were other September 11th, just very, very coincidentally throughout the history of this document.
Yeah, I mean, us historians, we know that chronology, that dates, is the most boring part of history, and yet, And yet it's the part that after you get old enough, then your memory, you remember when the world was not the way it is now, which is a very powerful knowledge because it means the world need not remain the same as it is now. And this is why we try to teach this possibility to the young, because it's the basis of human change. It's the basis where we can take charge of our destiny, but it's always in a class conflict. So I use September 11th largely, of course, as a statistic. And one of the dates I mentioned is the date of the Charter of the Forest and the date when the commons of the forest, the petrochemical resource, is recognized as being limited. It doesn't just belong to the Dick Cheneys of the world or to the Exxons of the world any more than it belonged just to King John. In fact, if I can say at this point that the subject of reparations is also a major part of many of the chapters of Magna Carta. And that's the that's reparations says the king must pay not only for his crimes, but the crimes of his father and his grandfather, of those who've gone before. By the crime, I mean taking the forests to himself. And that what Magna Carta says, these forests must be returned to multiple uses. The Charter of the Forest is not a document of communism by any means, or of pure equality, but it is a very powerful document of subsistence that all people have, as you would say, the right to life, the right to live, the right to health, the right to fuel, the right to warmth. This has been essential to a commoner's life, and it's an essential to this story.
So the world does owe you a living, and under that, you heard that, the world doesn't owe you a living. I usually say, yes, it does. Do you agree?
I agree, because the living that we extract from the world comes from the labor of our class, and it comes from our appropriations. And so very early on, we learn not to be a bully or not to be a hog. This is one of the earliest lessons that humans learn in their socialization. They learn how to share. I'm thinking of children now.
Well, there's a silly book you may have seen was a bestseller for a while called Everything I Learned About Life I Learned in Kindergarten.
Oh, what a wonderful book.
I just have seen the title, but that's it. You don't eat unless you have something to share with everyone, right?
Right. You hold hands crossing the road because it's dangerous. You take a nap if possible.
Well, maybe I shouldn't have called it silly. I apologize. Peter Linebaugh is my guest. He is the author of the Magna Carta Manifesto, Liberties and Commons for All, and it's published by the University of California Press. You can go to ucpress.edu, and I'll have a link on my site, peterwerby.com. And throughout American history, the Magna Carta has played a role as well, certainly in the Constitution, but I was, in looking through your book, realized that Frederick Douglass, the great African-American abolitionist, also called upon it to make his argument for the end of slavery.
Yeah, I know. The history of Magna Carta in America is really a subject of shame, and it's a subject of pride. As a subject of pride, Tom Paine called for a Magna Carta, and that's how the Declaration of Independence got written. In February, in Common Sense, 1776, he said we need a Magna Carta. Also, as a subject of pride, Magna Carta is, as you pointed out in quoting Frederick Douglass, it's been essential to the abolitionist movement. Granville Sharp, Olaude Equiano, the first great abolitionists of the 18th century, rested their case when it came, if they had to have English law upon Magna Carta. And right through the 19th century. I mean, here I just happen to have a quote that my friend Robin Kelly sent me. Listen to this. This is from 1884 by Thomas Fortune, a great African-American writer at the time. And he writes, "The fires of revolution are incorporated into the Magna Carta of our liberties."
Hmm.
1884, Peter. Isn't it amazing?
It is. Bring us a little to today. You spoke about how the Magna Carta incorporated into the American Constitution, and particularly into the Bill of Rights, was violated. It's often violated during times of war, the Civil War, World War One, more egregiously than even now, and in this era as well.
Right, and in the Civil War, it was violated too. There are many parts of Magna Carta, and some are violated, some are preserved. Earlier, I'd mentioned the shame of Magna Carta in American history, and there I'm just referring to how the phrase due process of law has been used. You know, we find it in the Federal Constitution, we find it in the 14th Amendment. But that's a phrase that comes right out of Chapter 39 of Magna Carta, and at first it was used to treat human beings as property. And then it was used to treat property as human beings. That is, Taney, in the Dred Scott decision, used that phrase to protect the slave master's property.
Yeah, this is the Supreme Court decision.
That's right.
Justice Taney, yeah.
That's right. And then after the Civil War, when slavery was abolished, then they used that same phrase in the Supreme Court slaughterhouse cases to treat the corporation as a person. So property now began to have all the rights that theretofore existed only for real-life human beings. And that's the basis of corporate power, in law, anyway.
Yeah, that was what, if I remember right, my colleague Tom Hartman has written about that, and that was, like, I believe, in like an 1888?
Yes, exactly.
Like. Yeah, yeah, and I don't know if we said that kind of quickly. What that meant was that laws against, for instance, corporations donating to political parties, which used to be illegal prior to this Supreme Court decision, or lobbyists used to be illegal. You could not try to influence legislation by paid representatives of a company, a corporation. When that Supreme Court decision came down, now, of course, they control the political process through the wealth that they dole out to particular candidates who won't challenge their power, either cooperate with them completely in one party or not give them too hard a time in another.
Yes, yeah, so Magna Carta also has a history of shame. It's like a lot of law, it's very tricky. And in American history, in English history, it lives even to this day. You know the Air Force base where the bombers took off to blast Afghanistan is in an island in the Indian Ocean. The Chagos Islanders were, that island was sold to America for the price of a nuclear submarine. It used to be owned by the British Empire. The Americans threw off the islanders so they could build their air base, send off their airplanes to bomb Afghanistan. But the Chagos Islanders took it to court in England, saying, we didn't have a say in this, and this is where we lived. And the English courts found in their favor, citing Magna Carta. Hmm. So it still acts as real law in much of the world. And we need to make it act as real law in our country now.
When you use the pronoun we, how do you flesh that out a little, and in what process?
Okay, well, when I say we, I'm a professor, and professors are, well, never mind that, but when I say we, I think I mean partly that we the people we, but I also mean the we of those who've been dispossessed. I mean the we of those who've been locked up. I mean the we of the people, we of the people without power, we of the people who have been foreclosed, we of the people whose water's been privatized. We have to find one another and make a movement to reclaim both our liberties and the commons. I mean, the thesis of this book is that we can't get these liberties back from dictators such as Bush unless we also get our commonwealth back. These two things go together.
Well, most of us now are depending on someone who has the word change on a campaign sign. So we're hoping, some of us are even praying, that there'll be this alteration of things as they are when someone else has the reins of government.
Well, speaking as a historian, I would say we can't just hope and pray. We must also act. And we need to act in a way that representatives listen to us. But I think Magna Carta produces an even more challenging notion of a democracy, which we can call direct democracy. Its whole concept of the jury or of the local assembly or the popular assembly is one of direct democracy, such as a community meeting, such as the meetings in Argentina when workers took over the factories again, such as the Ejido in Mexico, where the workers discuss how common land in the village is to be preserved. Like, when the crisis of subsistence becomes deep, then people on the ground get together and search for a solution to this, a practical solution. How do we get water? How do we have a roof over our heads? And these questions is the beginning of direct democracy. And I think we need to have this if those to whom we hope and pray are going to follow our example. Those leaders follow us, even though the media makes it seem the other way around.
Well, that's not a roadmap, and that's good, because it's now up to you and me. And if the project of change, of real change, seems daunting, believe it is. But we've done it before in American history, and I think now it's not a matter of we can do it again. I think if we are to survive in the manner that we would like, it's an imperative. Michael Ratner, who's been a guest on this show several times and president of the Center for Constitutional Rights, says, an original, powerful, and groundbreaking book, the Magna Carta Manifesto, makes us understand that freedom is not just about political freedom, but about guaranteeing the economic and social rights that allow all of us to partake of political freedom. The book is the Magna Carta Manifesto, Liberties and Commons for All. It's published by the University of California. You can go to ucpress.edu, or you can go to my website, Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com, and there'll be a link there. Peter Linebaugh, thanks for joining me on the Peter Werbe Show.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
That's the sound of people throwing out their old dehumidifiers. They've replaced them with the energy-saving Wave Ventilation Unit. Wave Ventilation expels moisture, gases, and toxins trapped in your basement or crawl space and replaces it with drier, fresher air. The computerized Wave Ventilation requires no maintenance. There are no buckets to empty, no filters to change. And compared to a dehumidifier, it will save you hundreds of dollars a year in energy costs. One customer wrote,
I was stunned by the difference. I had a dehumidifier for almost 20 years without ever getting rid of that musty smell. And now that smell is finally gone.
Wave can transform your home into a drier, healthier environment. Satisfaction guaranteed. Find out more about Wave Ventilation right now.
For free information, go to goodairnow.com. That's goodairnow.com. Or call 1-866-324-9481. That's 1-866-324-9481.
If you want a new computer but think you can't get credit, think again. Just call Tronix Country right now. No matter what your credit status is, now you can own a brand new desktop or laptop computer. Your approval is guaranteed, as long as you have an active checking account and can afford small weekly payments. With Tronix Country, there's no credit check. You will not be turned down. Call right now and order your new computer. You'll also get a free color printer and a free digital camera. Just call 800-990-2258. But that's not all. Call right now and you'll also get a free 22-inch high-definition TV with your paid purchase. You heard right. A free TV with your new computer. All you need is an active checking account and your approval is guaranteed. Don't wait. Call Tronix Country right now. Call 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258.
Detroit's Rock Station, 101, The Riff.
Is this on? Thank you. All right. Good morning, students. This is your principal speaking. Please listen closely to the following schedule changes. First period will be replaced by sleeping in. Second period will be replaced by warm weather. Third period will be replaced by belly flops. Fourth period will be replaced by goofing around. Fifth period will be replaced by batting leadoff. But there will be no changes to lunch. It will be in session every day.
School may be out for summer, but lunch is always in session. If your kids rely on subsidized school meals, call Gleaners Community Food Bank of Southeastern Michigan at 1-866-GLEANER or visit feedingamerica.org/summermeals.
A public service announcement brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Now's the time.
Now's the time to make a difference.
Now's the time to do what's right.
To help a family.
Now's the time to volunteer.
To make a commitment.
To make new friends.
To make dreams come true.
To help a child.
Now's the time to help Habitat for Humanity build hope and change lives with a family in your community or around the world.
Now's the time.
Now, more than ever, help build it.
Visit Habitat.org.
Detroit's Rock Station, 101 WRIF.
The Ref.
Yeah, you rock.
The Riff.